using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 8th of May, year of our Lord, 2024. Well, today we're going to take a quick look at the news, failing technology everywhere, and the grandiose plans of some globalist elites crashing and burning. That's right, we don't have to fear these people. They can't accomplish any of this stuff without our fear. And by the way, even when they've got all the money in the world, they can't make a lot of these things happen. So we're going to take a look at that. We're also going to take a look at the rising resistance to the WHO's pandemic treaty, or they sometimes call it the pandemic accord. We have 49 Republican senators have now signed on with Senator Ron Johnson. And they're asking Biden to do something. Wait a minute. Don't they understand their power under the Constitution? Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll be right back. Well, we're going to begin today with some light looks at a lot of phony garbage coming from our governments and from the ruling elite. Let's begin with China, where we've got a Chinese zoo trying to pass off dogs that they have dyed black and white as pandas. Here's the... Those are Chow Chows. And of course, they're cute, dyed like that. It got some people angry because they had dyed them that way, but they were actually just trying to pander to the zoo audience because they didn't have any pandas. Zoo officials said the dye was harmless. They dressed the dogs that way because they just didn't have any pandas. So I guess we could call them furries. They really are furries. They're closer to furries than these delusional kids that we are pandering to. And the schools. This is not the first time China has done this. Remember back in 2013, they dressed up a Tibetan Mastiff as a lion. It's even less believable, I think. And, of course, everybody soon realized that they were lying. But not the dog was not lying. But just as equally absurd is Saudi Arabia's big gnome. And remember we talked about this. This was a very good example of the kind of dark vision, a smart city out in the middle of the desert, you know, 105 miles long, as tall as a skyscraper the entire length. Let's pack everybody into this thing where we can watch and control them. I mean, it is like something out of, we've seen this over and over again. You know, one sci-fi thing after the other. Logan's Run. You know, don't go outside the city because there's nothing at all out there and you can't get anywhere because it's out in the middle of the desert. Really kind of a prison type of thing. Well, good news is that, well, first, let me show you the dystopian dream of this head-chopping crown prince, or as Gerald Celente calls him, the clown prince, Mohammed bin Salman.
For too long, humanity has existed within dysfunctional and polluted cities that ignore nature.
I think their government is dysfunctional.
A revolution in civilization is taking place. Imagine a traditional city and consolidating its footprint, designing to protect and enhance nature. The line will be home to 9 million residents and will be built with a footprint of just 34 square kilometers. And we are designing it to provide a healthier, more sustainable quality of life. The line's communities are organized in three dimensions. Residents have access to all their daily needs within 5-minute walk neighborhoods. and the line's infrastructure makes it possible to travel end-to-end in 20 minutes with no need for cars, resulting in zero carbon emissions. By leveraging AI technology, services are autonomous, saving you time
zero.
And effort.
Designed zero. Autonomous.
World-leading architects.
All buzzwords.
The line is 500 meters tall, 200 meters wide, 170 kilometers long, and housed within an elegant mirror glass facade. Intelligent solutions create efficiency and year-round temperate microclimate with natural ventilation. Energy and water supplies are 100% renewable. The line is designed as a series of unique communities, offering a wealth of amenities, providing equitable views and immediate access to the surrounding nature. With 40% of the world accessible within 6 hours at the heart of the globe's key trade routes.
Yeah, but you won't be able to get there.
And communities to thrive like nothing on earth seen before.
Yeah.
The line.
The line.
That delivers new wonders for the world.
Just remove that N and you got it. The lie. It's another grandiose plan of their gigantic egos. And their desire to control everyone and everything. You know, all the buzzwords of zero and autonomous and all the rest of the stuff. The lie. The lie. It was going to be a 105-mile-long skyscraper. And now they've cut it back 98% to 1.5 miles. They can't even get that built. It's absolutely pathetic. This is what comes from central planning. And this is why, folks, we should not fear them. We could beat them easily, but especially with God on our side. We really don't have to worry about these Goliaths out there. They're paper tigers, folks. Don't tremble in fear. As a matter of fact, when we get to politics, I almost started with the politics today. The fear and trembling of all these people about Trump. Is Trump going to make it? And it that is the thing that we need to be afraid of. The fear is what we need to fear. That's one thing FDR got right. He didn't get too much right. But he said, when he said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He was right about that. It was fear itself that made us, victims of what Trump did in 2020, what Biden did in 2021 and thereafter with the pandemic. And it is fear itself that gets us to put all of our hopes, aspirations, money and efforts and everything into the presidency. And the fact that we've got to have the right guy there or all hope is lost. I am sick and tired of hearing this. I'm starting to get kind of old here, and I can think back to every single election. And I've heard the same story every. This is the most important event of our life, the most important election of our life, and on and on. You know who tells you that? The media, left and right. Mainstream and alternative, they'll tell you this is the most important election of your lifetime. It is not, folks. You know, the most important election of your lifetime is going to be the sheriff in your local town or the city councilors or other things like that. That's a lot more important. And we'll give you examples of that. On Rumble, Junk Silver said they should have DK create their background music. Yeah, like, seriously, David, you could create a better track in your sleep. Yeah, but of course it is kind of it is, you know, this awful music to go with an awful idea. But now here's where they are at this point. The future of Neom, which is what Mohammed bin Salman calls it, is not looking too good, even after they cut it down by 98%.
Saudi Arabia's plans for the line have hit a surprising twist. Instead of moving forward, they seem to be taking a step back.
Aww.
Proposed 105 miles to just 1.49 miles. So, the Saudi Prince Dream project is still far from the success. While Saudi Arabia has adjusted its plans for the line, originally, they wanted to build a 500-meter-tall, mirrored linear city stretching 170 kilometers across the desert, accommodating 9 million people. However, now they're aiming to construct only 2.4 kilometers of it by 2030, with less than 300,000 residents moving in. This decision has led to some workers being let go by at least one contractor on the site, according to a document seen by Bloomberg. Despite the cutbacks, building even this small portion of the line presents a huge engineering challenge. It involves constructing two towering skyscrapers, each 500 meters tall, similar to New York's One World Trade Center, stretching sideways for 2.4 kilometers in the middle of the desert. Despite Saudi Arabia's decision to scale back plans for the line, progress hasn't halted entirely.
Yeah, well, you know, considering the fact that Saudi Arabia is not responsible for their wealth, we are. We created the need with our machines for the fuel that we found in the desert. We discovered the fuel in the desert. We extracted it. We transported it. We refined it. We used it for our machines. And then we gave them all the money. Other than that phenomenal wealth, which they're not able to manage. They can't even, I mean, there's plenty of people who could probably build something like this. But this thing is being conducted like the Three Stooges construction company. We got Mo, Larry, and Curly out there. Woo-woo! And it is absolutely a joke. What is even happening to the 1.5 mile, scaled down nightmare? So costs have soared. Sloppy construction setbacks mount. It's even worse than that. This is a Wall Street Journal. For example, it comes with a staggering cost. Officially, NEOM was budgeted at $500 billion. Well, Saudi's got lots and lots of money, so that's no problem, right? Except they really had not paid anybody to do the design and the calculation, so they didn't really know what it is. But still, $500 billion outside of the limitless fiat currency that comes out of the federal government, to anybody else, that's pretty big. That's half of their federal budget in a year. Half of their federal budget. So just the first 1.5 miles of the line will cost $100 billion. And so, it would, easily clear $2 trillion if they were to build it out. I think it'd be much more than that, actually. They said that's bigger than the gross domestic product of Brazil. You see, the emperor not only doesn't have any clothes, he's got these sheets and stuff. He's got no clue as to what he's doing. And, the construction has been disjointed and haphazard. The line's foundation, listen to this. This is why I say this is absolutely lunatic. They can't manage anything. They're not an industrial power. And they don't even have the intelligence to go out and hire somebody who could do it right. Because they started building the foundation years before they had a design. They didn't know where it was going to go or what the building was going to be, but they wanted to build the foundation. Why? Because this is to please the emperor, who has no clothes. So the architects were still working on the design. They didn't have any idea what the above ground structures are going to be, but they started building a foundation. Really? Why? Because they wanted to show progress to the clown prince. You got to please that guy, right? And this is why these people will fail. They will fail as the socialists and the central planners always fail. Because it's always about politics. It's always about virtue signaling. It's never about substance. These people are out there, like the energy secretary, demanding that we get rid of all of our appliances and buy new, more expensive appliances that are less efficient to put on a grid that they're in the process of shutting down. We can stop these people, folks. This is what I'm going to tell you.
Maybe we could get Gavin Newsom and Mohammed bin Salman on for a roundtable on failure, you know?
Yeah, Gavin Newsom
Which
built a mine.
Which one of you bungled things worse, the light rail or the giant prison city?
Gavin Newsom built his straight project out in the desert. 1,600 feet of light rail I talked about yesterday. It's out in the middle of the desert, and it's only 1,600 feet. And it takes you, what, about 5 minutes to walk that? And there's nothing on either end of it. So it's a bridge from nowhere to nowhere on a Thursday, as I say, that guy. It's ridiculous. That's become kind of a meme in our family. I like to get direction from Raleigh to Raleigh on a Thursday. Well, you can go from nowhere to nowhere in the desert there in California And I ran through the calculations yesterday. I compared it to the construction of the interstate system and the cost and the amount of time that it took. I think the amount of time it took was relative, you know, at the pace that it's going. 2,000 times slower. I think the cost was 47,000 times higher. But maybe I got those two numbers reversed. It might be one of them is 2,000 times more. The other is 47,000 times more. So depending on the cost per mile or the time per mile, for them to construct that. So they start building the foundation before they even have a design for the above ground structure because they want to please him. And then the architects decided, well, not only that, but we want it in a different place. Oh, no. So what difference does it make? Because they built the foundation before they designed the superstructure there. So now they have reduced it to 1.5 miles. And the Wall Street Journal, they said less than 300,000. Wall Street Journal says less than 200,000 people there instead of millions of several million residents, only 200,000. Meanwhile, they're spending $5 billion just to build the housing for the construction workers to go back and forth in the desert and to move the sand around. They're going to build this thing on the sand. But not even these were designed with much foresight, it seems. The community that is home to NEOM's engineers and administrative workers already needs to be demolished because more revisions mean that they have decided now to run the line through the place where they built their headquarters, the housing and everything for the engineers and the workers and the administrators. So they built the housing for the construction workers. Now they've changed it yet again, and they're going to have to tear that down because it's now going to go through that area. But it gets worse as they're just reacting. There's no planning with any of this stuff. Elsewhere along the line, workers are currently digging an enormous 450-acre pit that's 50 feet below sea level for the construction of a marina. In a comical turn of events, according to the Wall Street Journal, the veritable mountain of all the dirt that they excavated was dumped right on top of where a waterway was supposed to be built. What we have here is failure to communicate. So they're going to have to dig out a waterway, but instead this other area where they did the marina, they dumped the sand on the area where they're going to have to dig it out for the waterway. So they have to painstakingly re-excavate the huge pile of dirt and move it somewhere else. A literal example of project designers digging themselves into a hole. That's what I'm saying. These people, the failure should, my son says the average Saudi IQ seems to be 76. Did you find that on a source somewhere? You did? He's nodding. I said yes. That's hard to believe. Perhaps this has something to do with their decision making. Well, it does show that having lots of money doesn't make you smarter. Having lots of power doesn't make you smarter either. We can see that in Washington, can't we? And then you have this from the great Elon Musk and Tesla. His self-driving Tesla almost crashed headlong into a police car, and he put the video up that he was taking of it. I made it silent because there is a great deal of explicatives in this, as he nearly has a head on with a police car. And what I found to be most interesting, he didn't even talk about it in his post. It decides it's going to pass this cyclist, and it decides it's going to pass this cyclist by going across a double yellow line, which is there because it's a curve and you can't see around it. So a double yellow line on a curve. And the Tesla decides that it will take that opportunity to go around the cyclist. I thought these things were not very aggressive. I thought their big problem was that they'd set forever at like a four-way stop because they didn't want to take the initiative to make the first move. And so, you know, I guess they've made them a little bit more aggressive. So here he is taking pictures of it. You got the forward camera, the rear camera, and then his view from the seat here. And it's going to try to pass a cyclist, almost hits the cop head on. There's a cyclist up there. He's got a red circle around it. And, from his seat, he also sees the computer animation of what it thinks is doing. Here it goes around the curve. Oh, there comes the cop. Okay. Pulls it back over and the cop flashes his light at him. You know, the little, lights in the grill, and then puts a brake on and he says, well, I thought he was going to pull me over. Now, why is this very important? Well, because, see, there's a big experiment going on the roads, and you're a part of it. You know, these driverless cars, these driverless trucks that are going to let loose in Texas. Of course, that's a different company, but stakes are much higher when you've got a fully loaded semi-trailer, 80,000 pounds, and nobody is driving it except the computer. And they're going to do that in Texas. Just like they have put some of these things in and, you know, just to tootle around in the city, and they've created a tremendous mess in California. But anyway, he was paying attention and he grabbed the wheel. Now, one of the most terrific drives I've had with full self-driving yet, FSD. Yeah. I mean, they'll come up with a different acronym for that. important to be alert with FSD. I took over and pulled it back to safety, he said. And, so this is why the regulators are concerned about this. If he hadn't been sitting there filming it and, grabs it, turns it off. If he hadn't been doing that, if he had been playing with his video games or something like we saw that human driver that was in the Uber when the Uber ran over that homeless woman who was jaywalking with a shopping cart and didn't even slow down. Then this, you don't have that much time to react. And so it isn't self-driving. All of that is a lie. As Steve Wozniak, who was one of the very first people to get the Tesla, said, he said, I love my Tesla, but don't use the self-driving thing. That is trying to kill you. Came pretty close, didn't it? And so it doesn't matter. They're going to do these experiments on the road and you'll be a part of that experiment, whether you like it or not. And the government is not going to push back and shut these things down. There's some pushback now because they don't like some of the things that Elon Musk is doing with Twitter. The FBI and the CIA are enemies of the American people. Now, this is an article from the Mises Institute, and we're going to talk about that when we come back. But first, we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
By the way, we are going to have the third hour. I think it'll be an interesting interview. We have some people who specialize in getting people a secondary passport, helping them to immigrate to another country, that type of thing. And we'll take a look at it. Governments don't like that, and they're trying to make it more expensive. I want to talk to these guys and see if they've got something there for people who don't have that much money but would like to have a different place to try to escape to. We looked at this back in the 90s, as I said. We went to New Zealand, and we realized at that point in time that I'm too much embedded in America. I'd never be happy anywhere else. I need to stay here and fight. There was another aspect of it, though, that we continued to think about for a while, and that is residential ambiguity. You know, sometimes there is a lot of people will go the sovereign citizen, not a whole lot of people, but some people go the sovereign citizen route. I think that is, I know that that is a big antagonism to the system, which does not operate on the rule of law. I think it's kind of pointless to argue the rule of law to the courts over sovereign citizenship, over the income tax, over these, they will do what they wish. We have a lawless government, so even if the law is on your side, doesn't matter. I knew so many tax protesters when I was in the Libertarian Party that had been sent to jail. As a matter of fact, Peter Schiff's father, Erwin Schiff, was there at many of the meetings at the time. He had gone to jail as a tax protester, and he would, you know, show up reading his transcripts and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, that's, they're not, you're right, but they don't care. They don't care about the rule of law. But there is another thing, and that is, if you're not a citizen, they treat you differently. And that's true even at a state level. If you are not a resident of a city, or a state rather, you're out of state, they'll treat you differently. And usually, sometimes it's worse, depending on the, but usually it's, they don't treat you as badly as they treat their own citizens in the state. And that's especially true of governments. And so if you've got what I call residential ambiguity, you know, you are a citizen of somewhere else. And so wherever you are, you got two citizenships. Well, you know, if you're in country A, but you've also got a citizen where you are a citizen, but you also got a citizenship in country B, then you, you know, I'm a citizen of country B, not this one. Even better if, you're living in country C. And you can show them country A or country B. So maybe that's what they're doing. I was curious to, when they contacted me, to see what they have to say. So we're going to have them on the third hour. And one of the reasons that you need to be concerned about this, of course, is because of our government, enemy of the people. They don't even try to hide it anymore. The FBI, the CIA, there was an article, long article, about the FBI's programs, COINTEL program and CIA chaos. And it was looking at the 1960s and Charles Manson and how they believed that he was being used by the CIA and the FBI to discredit the hippie movement because the hippie movement was anti-war. And I can certainly buy into that. There's good evidence of that. This guy, by the way, spent decades writing this book. After he started getting into it, it's like, whoa, that doesn't add up. And he starts doing more and more research. If that is the case, shed another example of our government funding and supporting both sides of a war, which we've seen them do over and over again in foreign countries. You know, they were pushing feminism. They were pushing the drugs. They were pushing this. You know, CIA was pushing the LSD and the, you know, the happy camper van or whatever. I can't remember what, Kesey and, is a merry band of pranksters or something like going across the country, you know, spreading the good news of LSD. They were behind all of that stuff. They created the LSD stuff. And then, and I don't think it was, well, this got out of hand. Let's do something about it. They also created the feminist movement and things like that as well. And so they're on both sides of even the cultural war domestically. But, Mises this is Ryan McMakin, says the FBI and the CIA are enemies of the American people. Now, this is a kind of a straight-up economic organization, and it kind of is a sign of the times that we live in, that an organization that's fundamentally about economics would say something like this. It was the kind of stuff that we would say 40 years ago. In the Libertarian Party, and we would say we need to abolish the IRS, we need to abolish these other agencies and stuff like that. And people, you know, we just get eye rolls from any reporters who are there. You guys are off the wall. You know, that it was way too early for that. Not too early for us. It was like, what are we waiting for? Let's get rid of them. And that was 40 years ago. Now, respectable economic organizations are talking about that. I think that in and of itself is newsworthy. But the first sentence begins where I began the show with yesterday, complaining about the culture of secrecy. Because, folks, a culture of secrecy is an evil, dark occult. Because that's what it means. Occult means hidden. What do these people have to hide? Well, the evil, dark things that they're doing. They don't want to bring them into the light. And he says, any human agency that operates within a culture of secrecy without oversight, without accountability, will operate A, outside the rule of the law, B, outside of moral restraints, and C, outside of ethical constraints. And he's exactly right. So if you've got a secret cult like the FBI, the CIA, national security, just in general, everything that's, you know, all of this, and it began with the FBI and the CIA and these NSA and stuff, right after, you know, World War II, everything is secret. Well, why? Because it's national security. But now everything is secret. And we always go out as a reporter talking to people about, well, you know, there's been reports that you just got approval for this new machine at the TSA. Are you guys going to be putting it here at this airport? I can't talk about that. I can't talk about that. It's like, wait. Yeah, everybody knows what this machine is. The details are out there. You can't say whether you're going to put it in at this airport or not. Come on. You know, but everything is a secret, right? But what it does is it destroys the law, morality, and ethics to have these dark, secretive, occultic organizations. The CIA, the FBI, and the NSA are examples of the agencies that are accountable to no one. And technocrats, he said, like it that way. Just pour in the money and leave them alone. And as we see with these programs that the FBI has done, and you know, I just think it's funny that the CIA, you know, FBI had its COINTELPRO program, counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, and CIA had its Operation Chaos. Tells you what they wanted. That was back in the 60s. That was when you had Get Smart. Remember Get Smart? The spoof of the spy stuff with Don Adams, and it was written by Buck Henry and Mel Brooks were the writers on this thing. And they were spoofing, but they were also telling you what the government wanted you to hear as well, I think. Because it was interesting, you know, Agent Smart and 99 worked for control. And the bad guys were called Chaos. Wait a minute. The CIA called themselves Chaos because that's what they were after. And then the control comes in after that. So the CIA, the FBI, the NSA are examples of unaccountable organizations. The CIA's chief technology officer, Nand Mulchandani, recently addressed a gathering of top tech and government officials in Washington, where he talked about a total technocratic makeover of the agency. See, these people are the ones who are behind the technocracy. The techneocratic age was what Zbigniew Brzezinski called it. This trilateral globalist that they elevated to run the Carter presidency. And he said, we are between two ages, and the coming age is the technocratic age. And we're going to know what you want to do before you do it. We're going to know everything about you, monitor everything about you, predict what you're going to do. They call that now anticipatory intelligence, and it's run by these same organizations here. That other AI, anticipatory intelligence. We're looking at transforming every single part of what the agency does, he said. The commitment to integrating AI into its core operations. And did I not put that on here? I had a piece of paper. Yeah, I didn't bring it out. But a piece of paper. We just got a thing from Texas Tag. Their toll stuff. They put tolls all over Austin. This is one of the many reasons I wanted to get out of there. The other thing is a kiddie genital mutilation sanctuary now, fighting even the state government. That's Austin. Not to mention the climate, but the tolls everywhere that they're putting in. Taking forever to build them, costing the world to build them, creating endless traffic jams while they take their time building them. And then we keep getting these messages. And we just got another one, you know, threatening us. Oh, here's a $3 toll. Supposedly that we rode on. We haven't been there for 2 years. Okay. So haven't lived there for 2 years. But they sent us a notice. They threatened us with late charges because we had not paid it. Additional charges because we had not signed up and give them all of our information on the internet. So because they had to deal with us by, mail, even more charges with that. So, you know, we're talking about $10-$15 here with this thing for something we never did. I said, you know, so Karen called him up and said, you know, we haven't lived there for 2 years and this is total garbage. I want to see the picture you've got. Oh, well, let me look. And as always, and this has happened to us several times, they go back and it's like, well, never mind. It's a different car. The license tag is off by a number. And, you know, so they're automated license plate readers and ticket pushers made a mistake. And, you know, it's just amazing. Now, the reason I mentioned that is because what do you see from the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA, CIA especially? We're going to put AI into our core operations. Everything we do is going to be based on AI. It's going to be the backbone of what we do here, our AI tools. Everything from field operations to analytical and support functions. And, of course, they plan on doing that with the IRS as well. And so what could possibly go wrong with it? Well, exactly what we see with the Texas toll thing, which, by the way, you know, I like that about Tennessee. We were the state that didn't have any tolls. And Governor Bill Lee, bless his heart, is pushing real hard to get tolls in. And let me tell you that the toll roads that are being run by foreign corporations in most cases, as a matter of fact, the person that Karen had to talk to was from India, barely spoke English. So, you know, this is a globalist plan to have these foreign toll companies control our infrastructure. And whenever you see a Republican politician pushing toll roads, mark that politician, like Bill Lee, mark him. You know when he starts doing that, where he's coming from. Saw the same thing happen with Tom Tillis in North Carolina. Brought in the first toll roads. What is he? He's one of the biggest globalist Republican senators there is. And, of course, he did that when he was the Speaker of the House. They handpicked him, moved him over the guy who had been the House, who had been the minority leader for a long time, an honest guy that I knew. And they picked Tom Tillis over him when they got the majority. For the first time since the Civil War, in response to Obama, 2 years after they all voted for Obama, they said, we don't want any of that. And everything went Republican, except for the congressional offices. They put this guy in as speaker, and he was on the and he did the toll road stuff, and boom, you know, next thing you know, he's running for U.S. Senate, and he's been there ever since. So mark people like that. Mark people like Bill Lee. Bringing in, Tennessee was one of only 14 states that didn't have toll roads. He's working really hard. He calls them, listen to this, he calls them choice lanes. Oh, doesn't that get you? And that really gets me going. Choice lanes. The CIA's venture capital firm InQtel invests in promising companies to aid in this artificial intelligence process. The InQtel portfolio has swelled to over 300 companies now, most of which are involved in AI. And, of course, they created InQtel at the time where the Internet was about to go big, in the 1990s when the hardware started to get up to speed where they could start to do pictures and things like that. At that point, they created InQtel. They went public for the first time with a venture capital firm. And they started giving money to people like Zuckerberg and others. They funded people that would compete with each other, but all of them would work with the CIA. They wanted to fund the Internet. They wanted to fund social media companies so that they can control both of those things. And, of course, all of them folded into geospatial intelligence. Now they're focused on AI. And now they've got over 300 companies, almost all of them AI. Now, the reason that McMakin is talking about this is because he watched this three-hour program between Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson. And they talked about a wide variety of things, but they did get into the CIA and the, you know, the deep state and stuff like that to some degree. And he says, what I want to highlight here, however, is how remarkable it is that two major media figures, Rogan and Carlson, are announcing to their millions of listeners and readers that organizations like the CIA and the FBI are despicable agencies committed to undermining the legal and constitutional institutions of the United States. This is long overdue. Well, it's long overdue because these people who, you know, Rogan and Carlson, they're not leading opinion makers. They're following. And the fact that everybody knows this now, and so they have to say it in order to not lose credibility. It's gotten to the point where even though Tucker Carlson could mock and make fun of people who talked about 9/11 and all the lunacy of that, which is every bit as lunatic as the magic bullet of the JFK assassination, the collapsing Building 7 that wasn't hit, and all the rest of this stuff, he would make fun of them. You know, they'd ask me these questions like, you know, what's the melting point of steel and how can a building collapse and free fall and anything? These people are idiots. He would constantly mock it. Never took any of that stuff back. Never told us when or why he had his epiphany. They are essentially there to connect with the audience, to keep their credentials there. That's why they're talking about it. But fine. Better late than never. Better that they talk about it. But understand that they're limited hangout. Always have been, always will be. Tucker's daddy worked for the CIA. He worked for the propaganda arm of the CIA, Voice of America. Tucker applied to the CIA as Putin threw shade on him and said, you wanted to be in it, didn't you? But they only hire smart people. Remember that? what a dick. Anyway, libertarians know all this, says Ryan McMakin, and they've observed for decades the breed of small government conservatives who one minute claim the government can't do anything right, and then the next minute they're simping for heroic CIA and FBI agents. Is there anybody like that that we know of? Like Donald Trump? Right? Isn't that what Donald Trump does? Oh, the government, they can't do anything right. Oh, but what heroes we have with these people. People like this have long since checked their critical thinking skills at the door. But he says that's not to say the leftists are guiltless as well. The left in 2024 has rarely met a regime spook that it didn't like. They've now put them on as their commentators everywhere. Last month, the New York Times said, quote, the deep state is actually kind of awesome. Well, that's, they should know because they're part of it. The job of opposing these contemptible enemies of freedom at America's intelligence agencies, especially the FBI, CIA, NSA, falls to the minority of Americans who actually care about law and human rights enough to seek true restraints on regime power. Those of us in this minority must never miss an opportunity to disparage, to doubt, to question, to generally express loathing for these organizations and for every single agent and employee at these agencies who collects a taxpayer-funded salary, including the daddy of Tucker Carlson, and including Tucker Carlson, who covered for the pharmaceutical people who are paying him $25 million a year. I just saw Sean Hannity just put up his mansion on Long Island for like $19 million or something like that. He's leaving for Florida, and so, you know, he's going to sell one of his multi-million-dollar homes there. These people, where'd they get their money? They got their money selling Trump sugar water. Sugar water, that's what Alex called it, sugar water. Kool-Aid, you know, like Jonestown Kool-Aid that you inject instead of drinking. They make lots of money. Alex made a lot of money selling that. Alex made a lot of money selling fear. Alex made a lot of money selling riots with January the 6th. Anyway, Harry Truman actually wrote an op-ed piece in the Washington Post, and their response was to bury it at the back of the paper. And then the CIA came out and said he didn't write that. Somebody else wrote that for him and put his name on it. And then he came out and said, no, I did write that, and he doubled down on it. But here's what he had to say at the first case. He said, for some time, I've been disturbed by the way the CIA has been diverted from its original assignment. It has become an operational and at times a policy-making arm of the government. By the way, this headline, CIA goes for peace talks in Gaza. You want to know who the real government is? The CIA. They're the ones who start the wars. They run the coups. Imagine they go over there and say, well, we'd like for you to do this and this, or we might remove you. Well, that's the way these people are. I mean, Joe Biden can't find his way off the stage. He's not running this stuff. So who's running it? Well, you got some Democrats there, but it's really the CIA who's running it. You got some Democrat operatives, but it's ultimately the CIA that's running it. They're the ones who are going around and going to run the peace talks one way or the other. This has led to trouble, said Harry Truman, and may have compounded our difficulties in several explosive areas. I've never had any thought that when I set up the CIA that it would be injected into peacetime cloak and dagger operations. You mean like even spying on Americans without a search warrant? Like we just had Traitor Johnson do? Not only expand the time period, but expand the scope and the people that they could use to do this? So the Washington Post buried it, his op-ed piece. Put it on page A11, the editor did. This is the president, right? Writing an op-ed piece, no big deal. Let's just put it at the back of the thing. And then the CIA director, Alan Dulles, lied and claimed that Truman had been quite astounded when he saw his own article and that the whole thing was the work of a Trump aide and a Truman aide, and Truman didn't know. But then, in other words, he's going to retract it over what he had to say. And he was a former president at the time, but still, that's not newsworthy. You're going to bury it at the back of the paper. And so he said it was not intended to operate. Then he wrote another. He says the CIA was not intended to operate as an international agency engaged in strange activities. That's what he said. He said, if I'd known what was going to happen, I never would have created the CIA. Or he created the NSA with an executive order as well. As Ryan McMakin says, what about those strange activities? What is he talking about? Is he just talking about assassinations and coup attempts and things like that? Or is it also things like MKUltra, as he points out, which was running at that time? Even by the late 1950s, they had MKUltra, the mind control experiments, LSD and other drugs and things like that. The CIA was known to drug its victims against their will, such as 7 black inmates in Kentucky who were fed double, triple, and quadruple doses of LSD for 77 straight days. Wow. See, that also brings up it. Some people will take it, lose their mind. Other people, they take it over and over again. It might have a cumulative effect, or it might not have a cumulative effect. That's one of the things that when we talk about the injections, you never know how it's going to react with people. Some people would have an immediate reaction. Some people would die right away before they were vaccinated, in other words, because they didn't count you as being vaccinated until you'd had your shot number 2 30 days later. If you died between your first shot and before you could get your second shot, you weren't vaccinated. As a matter of fact, they had to be 2 weeks after your second shot before you were considered to be vaccinated. So if you died at any point between your first shot and 2 weeks after your second shot, you were listed as somebody who died unvaccinated. These are the kind of games that they play. But when we talk about these scientists who are looking at the astounding health effects of these vaccines and making pronouncements like, well, I think within 3 to 5 years, everybody who even got one shot is going to be dead. I don't think you can say that just because of things like this. You got 7 inmates given double, triple, and quadruple doses for 77 days of LSD. If they're not stark raving mad by the end of time, that's the difference in individual metabolism or something. Frank Olson, of course, we've always talked about him. They actually did a documentary, I think, called Wormwood or something. But I read the book that's put together by his family and how they gave him secret doses of LSD. He confronted them on it. He was going to be a whistleblower. They wound up defenestrating him, throwing him out of a window in New York. CIA faced some scrutiny in the wake of the Vietnam War, yet the agency had hardly been reformed by the time the U.S.'s War on Terror was launched in late 2001. That didn't affect them at all. They came roaring back. Even the FISA Act, which was the result of the Church Committee hearings, they used that as a tool to spy on Americans without a search warrant. They always use all this stuff. to their own advantage. It's just like the guy who was the one who came up with a euphemism for terror, torture rather, enhanced interrogation. He was watching the Frank Church Committee hearings, and he said, he was a lawyer. He says, these guys need a good lawyer. They sure do. For the kind of stuff they do, you better believe they do. So he got in there. He became the chief counsel. He came up with that that lie that it was enhanced interrogation. And, of course, they were torturing people. The lies, what they got them to say while they were torturing them were lies. And they used that to lie us into the Iraq War. And then Trump promoted her to the head of the CIA. CIA returned to its illegal medical torture in 2001, assuming that it ever stopped, with new medical experiments on regime prisoners. Documents uncovered by the ACLU show that the CIA doctors are still used to provide a veneer of scientific legitimacy to CIA torture programs. In the age of vaccine passports, this alliance between doctors and the CIA should alarm any defender of human rights. The CIA let 9/11 happen right under its nose. Now, here's where I have a big disagreement with Ryan McMakin. No, I think that was perhaps one of their most successful lies. And I think it was tied, as I've said over and over again, it was the second shoe to drop. They happened together. You know, Dark Winter and the model legislation sent out to the states and the germ games for 20 years. And the second shoe to drop after the three buildings that were hit by two planes. There was another shoe to drop 20 years later. And that was the fake pandemic and all these vaccine passports and all the rest of this stuff. CIA did not fail with 9/11. It was their biggest success. The devil's biggest victory is to make people think that he doesn't exist. They are more than happy to have you think that they failed to know what Osama bin Laden was doing on 9/11. And so he calls for ending the FBI, ending the CIA. This is where we are right now. We're in a fourth turning. People are fed up with their corrupt institutions. Institutions have been around long enough that people know what they are about and are demanding that they be changed. This is the time that we're in. And so we need to understand that we're in that time because they do. And they're trying to use it to their advantage. If we understand that, it won't be used against us. The history of the FBI lends substantial plausibility to Tucker Carlson's claim that intelligence agencies are in the business of blackmailing members of Congress. This is another thing that supposedly Tucker has discovered. Yeah, he doesn't even mention Dennis Hastert, who was the longest-serving Speaker of the House of Republicans, I think for any flavor of politician. Simply because he was blackmailable. He was a pedophile wrestling coach, and that's why they picked him to run for Congress, and that's why they picked him to be Speaker of the House, because they could control him with blackmail. Hoover, during his 48-year reign at the FBI, of course, was lauded over the decades as a hero, but in reality he was, in the words of historian Beverly Gage, a one-dimensional tyrant, a backroom schemer, who strong-armed the rest of the country into submission, the most influential federal appointee of the 20th century, until we get to Fauci. They don't say that. That's what I say. Fauci's like J. Edgar Hoover. He knows how to play these people. He knows how to get what he wants. When Hoover died, his secretary was destroying files for a very long time. It was Truman also who said, you know, the FBI is trending towards a Gestapo. And he says he's got files on everybody, and Nixon said the same thing. You know, this guy's blackmailing everybody. It was an open secret to all then. But now, you know, Tucker's going to let you in on it. Unfortunately, many Americans are enthralled to these organizations thanks to relentless propaganda that tells us this American version of the KGB exists for our own good. And I think it is also the fact that we have an inability to imagine this kind of evil. And I say that all the time. I say it about, people like Ted Bundy, and he was able to get away with that because, you know, he's such a polite, nice looking young man, very intelligent, you know, clean cut. He's a serial killer and a rapist. And people just can't, that's just so far outside of what normal people think. You know, you can't meet somebody and think that of them. And so, you know, bad people project the kinds of bad things that they do, you know, the kinds of stuff that Hillary Clinton was accusing people of. And so she's projecting what she does, what her husband does onto other people. We see that all the time. We, on the other hand, normal people project onto these psychopaths normalcy, right? We want to believe that they're normal. We want to believe that they're like us. They're not at all like us. That's our big problem. So if you look at the indictment against Congressman Henry Cuellar, this is Conservative Treehouse talking about this. I had several people send this to me. Rather remarkable indictment against Congressman Henry Cuellar, Texas, Democrat, that everyone should read, says Conservative Treehouse. You might remember that he was openly critical of the Biden border crisis in the latter half of 2021. Approximately a few weeks after he was openly and strongly criticizing Biden, FBI agents raided his home. At the time of the FBI raid, everyone noted the visible connection between his criticism of Biden and the launch of the DOJ investigation against him. The timing was just too convenient. Last Friday, an indictment was unsealed. Representative Cuellar and his wife were each charged with two counts of conspiracy to commit bribery of a federal official and have a public official act as an agent of a foreign principal. Two counts of bribery of a federal official, two counts of conspiracy to commit wire fraud, two counts of violating the ban on public officials acting as agents of a foreign principal, one count of conspiracy to commit concealment money laundering, and five counts of money laundering. So these are all things that possibly he could have done, all things that would have been ignored had he not opposed Biden publicly. Interestingly, the charges and the activity date back to 2014. They were willing to let all of this stuff, assuming that it happened. Again, these are allegations from the government, but let's just assume for the moment that this stuff really happened. If it did happen, they were fine to let it sit there for a decade. And it only became a point of investigation after he criticized Biden. That's when he got indicted. Cuellar and his wife are a case study in how the average federal politician gets wealthy from selling their office. All the D.C. politicians participate in this type of influence selling. I agree with that, except now here's the thing that I disagree strongly with. Conservative Treehouse. One of the primary reasons the intelligence community was so fast to join in an effort to eliminate the threat of Trump was specifically due to his lack of corrupt activity. Seriously? Are you serious? This is the delusional. You talk about Trump delusion syndrome. That's what I call it. Trump derangement is what the left has. Trump delusion is what the right has. Or else they just want to suck up to him before audience. Trump is in the same boat as Cuellar. They are not innocent, I don't think. But yes, they are being prosecuted politically. That's the thing to take away from it. You know, when you look at Donald Trump, yes, Biden came after Trump because he's his political opponent. It is a Game of Thrones. Yes, Biden came after Henry Cuellar because he opposed Biden. That doesn't mean that Henry Cuellar is innocent, and it doesn't mean that Trump is innocent. It just means that they focus on them because it's a Game of Thrones. And yet people can't see that. Conservative Treehouse can't see that. It's absolutely amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the David Knight Show.
Well, one of the things the Marxist mobs of protesters are doing, they have defaced a World War I monument in New York City. Now, the elderly granddaughter of the guy who sculpted it, just absolutely incredulous at their ignorance about all of this. She said, it's unbelievable. She said, what a time we are living in. She is 76. She said that's when she learned of the graffiti and the anti-Israel stickers that were plastered on late grandfather Carl Ilava's historic World War I tribute to American heroes. She said they're idiots. She said it's really ironic, too, because these guys, these American boys who gave their lives and blood, were fighting for people's freedom. She said, and here you have these hooligans who just don't understand history. And probably they don't just understand what they're doing either. Well, I think they don't understand history, but I don't want to denigrate the good intentions of people who thought they were doing good. But the people who fought in World War I were deceived. They were deceived by Woodrow Wilson and many others. That's not to say that what they did was not heroic. In terms of once they got thrown into that, whether it was by being drafted or deception, they acted honorably. But the war itself was, but I got to say that this defacement and graffiti that's there is not coming from that place. It's not coming from Woodrow Wilson was a lying scumbag who killed unbelievable numbers of people. I mean, it really is heartbreaking when you look at so many of the people. There was a composer, his name is George Butterworth or Butterfield. I can't remember which it is, but he wrote a very, very, very popular classical piece that's a part of the repertoire of most orchestras, and they team it up usually with Ralph Vaughan Williams' piece and The Banks of Green Willow. And he didn't have much that he got done. It's one of the few works that he got finished because he was shipped off to World War I and he died needlessly there. Needlessly. Travis says these people who hate Americans, these people hate who Americans used to be. The fact that a people that honorable and self-sacrificing existed is itself a condemnation of their debased and deracinated existence. I couldn't say it better myself. That's exactly right. Yeah, they hate honor. They hate people who saw that they had a duty to do. Yes, I believe it was misguided, but I think they acted honorably. She said, I'm very sad. I think my grandfather would feel the same way. I think he'd be saddened that people can be so misguided, so destructive of things that are not about them and not about their political beliefs. And I think that also applies to wars like World War I. It was so incredibly destructive, so misguided, something that was not about America, something that was not about American political beliefs. But that's not to, again, I'm not denigrating what these people did. He wouldn't be enraged. He was too kind of a man, but he would be very, very sad, she said, I think. He'd probably feel sorry for these people who did it, these youthful idiots of the Marxist Revolution. Again, they're doing this not because they hate war. They're not doing this because they want peace. They're doing this because they hate America. They hate our society. They hate people who have duty and responsibility and stand up for society. They hate the builders because they can't do anything except destroy. It was a large bronze statue featured seven soldiers, including one holding a collapsed comrade. It was placed near the park's entrance and the armory for the 7th Regiment, whose infantry helped to break Germany's Hindenburg line of defense at the conclusion of World War I. That was the 1927 plaque that was there. So perhaps these, this vandalizing mob can't read either. No, they don't know what it's about, but they hate everything that is American. One American hater burned a U.S. flag at its base while some protesters climbed on top of the statue's soldiers and draped Palestinian flags over them. And they did the same thing to a statue of Civil War General William Tecumseh Sherman nearby. Well, now that I could support. if you really understand Sherman's, this guy was literally insane, said Ulysses Grant. And he was very, shall we say, he was unhinged and he was looking for revenge. Alan Dershowitz, meanwhile, is holding daily press conferences about how to punish anybody who criticizes Israel. There is absolutely nothing that Alan Dershowitz won't do. You know, you harm a Jew or you offend a Jew, we sue. That's what he said yesterday. Now he's saying any university that divests from Israel should have its federal funding terminated. Let's hold that thought for a moment before we get into that aspect of it. Why is a university that has enough money that it can invest it, why does it need to have federal funds? If it's got some huge hulking trust fund that it's looking to put all of that money into, why do taxpayers have to fund these universities? I think that all universities, regardless of what their position is on Israel, ought to be defunded. And I want all foreign aid defunded, including to Israel. All federal aid defunded to foreign governments. All federal aid to these foreign institutions that we call universities defunded as well. And not just because I disagree with them, but because there's no authority in the Constitution for universities to be given money. But that's why it exists. And the fact that they give them money and the fact that he wants the money removed shows that we all understand the way the federal government operates outside of the rule of law is by bribery and by blackmail using fiat cash from the Federal Reserve. That is their superpower. And so this is money for mandates. The thing is, Dershowitz never had a problem when they were using it to push Marxism. He never had a problem when they were using it to push racism against white people. He never had a problem with any of that, and neither do any of the Republicans in Congress have a problem with any of that. They only have a problem with the anti-Semitism. And that's the double standard that is just amazing to me. So, yes, absolutely, take away their money. But he wants to take away their money now, not even because of hate speech, or I should say speech that he hates. Any criticism of a foreign government that owns our government should have their money taken away. That's what Mike Johnson's up. But he goes a step further. If you don't invest your excess stash of cash that you've got, if you don't invest that in Israel, then you remove it from Israel, then you ought to have your federal funding cut down. So we pay taxes so that the federal government can give the money to these universities. They've got so much money that they invest it in all these different types of things, including Israel. And then if they pull any of that out of Israel, oh, under those circumstances, they will stop giving them our money. And it is our money, even though it's being created out of thin air by the Federal Reserve, because we have to pay it back with interest. This is the same guy who was saying during the lockdowns, yeah, what we're talking about here, we're talking about coercing people into taking vaccines, but I'm talking about forcing people. I'm talking about sending, Dershowitz wanted the police to come to your door and drag you out of your house. That's his words, drag you out of your house and put a needle in your arm. And he said, and I'll defend that before the Supreme Court and I'll win. Well, that doesn't mean that it's right if he wins. It doesn't mean that it's ethical, moral, or legal, or constitutional. It doesn't mean that it's any of that stuff. It just says, well, this corrupt political institution of 9 political appointees is totalitarian and supports that kind of dictatorial government. And we already know that. And he knows it as well. That's why he's confident that he could win arguing a literal mandate. We're going to drag you out of your house and put this needle in your arm by force. This is the kind of person Alan Dershowitz, big fan of Donald Trump. That's the kind of person he is. That's the kind of person Trump is too, folks. Don't tell me he wouldn't mandate this stuff. You'll find out if he becomes president a second time what he's capable of doing fully. If you didn't understand what he's capable of doing in 2020. So, yeah, speak no evil. Do not divest from Israel. You must invest in them. Or Alan Dershowitz is going to come for you. Just amazing. Just amazing. And he's one of these at Harvard, you know, teaches law at Harvard. He's one of the biggest problems out there of these corrupted institutions. And yet, this is all he's going to talk about. A third of Stanford students are okay with violence to shut down speech, says a report. Well, if he was their law professor, you'd probably have a higher percentage of people because the government is force. Dershowitz, just as with a vaccine, in many ways has supported the violence and the terrorism of government. And that's what we're talking about with these mandates, with these, with the censorship and all the rest of it. And he supports that. Absolutely does support that. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. You're listening to the David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back. Let's talk a little bit about the Biden administration and some of their social engineering. It extends outside of the schools, what is happening there. The Biden administration has just decided that you cannot be involved in foster care unless you want to foster the LGBT agenda, specifically the transgendering of kids. And if you don't support that, he is demanding that you should not be part of the foster care system. Well, how can he do that? Because foster care is run by at the state level, isn't it? He does it with the money, always. Always that type of thing. And of course, we knew that was where he was coming from, you know, believing that Christian parents are unfit. We just had a family just a few months ago. Unfortunately, the publicity caused the Biden administration to back off. But you had a German homeschooling family had fled Germany, gotten political asylum here a decade ago. They've been supporting themselves. They're not living off of the government. And they're educating their own kids because their kids would have been taken away from them if they homeschooled them in Germany. And so Biden wants to send them back. Fortunately, the publicity caused his organization to back off. But now he wants to take children away from parents. You know, Germans will take them away if you homeschool them. He wants to take them away if you don't misgender them, and you don't play that game. or if you push back against what the government is doing in terms of gaslighting and grooming minors. Minors, folks. The state has begun to supplant parental guidance, more critically, divine authority, even, with its own secular doctrine. It's parental rights always at the center of this because they want to destroy the family. And the key thing about this was this was an agenda that's been around for a very long time. The UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Every other country has signed it except for the United States. And yet you have politicians and courts especially will enact certain parts of this UN agenda, the whole idea of the rights of a child. This is all tied together with what Hillary Clinton was pushing, takes a village to raise a child. In other words, she says the government should raise your children. We don't want a family, right? Families are bad. Villages are good because I'm in charge of the village. So this whole idea of children's rights is there to supplant parental rights. But children don't have rights. We've never let them drink alcohol, smoke tobacco, have a gun, drive a car. You can't get a tattoo in most states unless you are 18 years old. Some one or two of them have it like at 16 or something. But we understand that you don't do certain things like that. And yet they have swept all that stuff away, demand that kids get something that is far more permanent than a tattoo. You know, you can undo a tattoo to some degree, I guess, but you're not going to undo this gender mutilation or sterilization. Under these new regulations, any child who professes an LGBT identity can demand placement in a home that affirms this identity, effectively excluding Christian foster homes. The state, rather than God, rather than the child's own parents, becomes the ultimate authority on morality and identity. And right now they're doing it with foster kids, but it's not going to stop there. It's already happening with families in Canada. This is a violation of our rights. It's a violation of religious liberty. It is an aspiration of the United Nations. See, they, in order to have a global world government where everybody is enslaved, you got to get rid of families and parents. And you do that by getting rid of parental rights. Why should this concern us? First, it undermines the natural and biblical role of the family. Scripture teaches us children are a heritage from the Lord, entrusted to parents who are tasked with their upbringing according to godly principles. And folks, if you don't believe that, believe Richard Dawkins, who regrets that we've lost the Christian foundations of our society. You take away God, and you watch what is happening to our society. That's where we are right now. By sidelining Christian homes that do not subscribe to the affirming agenda, the state disrupts this divine mandate, replacing it with humanism, with transhumanism, essentially, because that's what transgender is moving the Overton window to. The whole transgender thing with kids is moving this to pedophilia. Again, talking about our friend Alan Dershowitz. You know, he thinks that the age of consent should be lowered to satisfy his preferences, should we call it? He's got his sexual preferences as well. He wants it to kids 13 or something like that. I forget exact age that he was talking about. But he wants it to very young teens. And so that's one of the Overton windows that are being moved. They're opening that Overton window, if you want to talk about it being open. And then, of course, the other part of this is the transgender stuff. I mean, the transhuman stuff. All this stuff about furries. We were just talking about this the other day, you know. When we were in school, if you tried to even do anything that was a tiny fraction of that kind of disruption, having people wearing furry costumes, just even if it wasn't the kind of behavior that they're exhibiting, making animal noises and crawling around on all fours, even if they just came in wearing a animal costume, that would not be allowed. I'm sorry, that's against the dress code. It sent you down to the dean of boys or girls and you'd get a spanking with a paddle. But let alone to have them have these paws that have claws on them that they can attack other students with. It's just amazing that they allow that to happen. Why do they allow that to happen? Well, because they're pushing the virtual reality as well. Transhumanism and virtual reality. That's the other part of it besides pedophilia that they're talking about. And so when we look at this, it's important to remember, and we're going to get into the politics here in a moment. RFK Jr. was asked about this child mutilation. Here's what he had to say.
What will you do as a president to get this nonsense out, to prevent kids under the age of 18, with or without the consent of the father, to transition? You may even say that is an okay policy you're a part of that many families disagree with. One, what's your position on this, and what will you do as a president?
I mean, my position is that people should not be able to have access to those procedures, that minors shouldn't, without parental permission. And, you know, I don't know enough about it, Patrick, to say that it should be completely illegal.
For under 18?
No. But, yeah, I just don't know enough. What I'm going to tell you, because I don't know.
Well, Robert, I mean, you're...
But I don't... You know what? I don't know enough.
I know nothing.
Cases where it saves somebody's life. I don't know that. And I'm not going to tell you that I have an answer to a question.
But there's
that
a difference.
Robert, there's a big difference
between those two things. One, saving somebody's life to transition and cut the dangling off. How are you saving that person's life? Some of these things, logically, they make no sense to parents. So parents are sitting there, you're going to have to answer this for both parents on both sides.
There is conflicting values here. And one of the values is freedom to do what you want with your own body and have the government tell you you can or you can't do that.
Who is protecting kids under the age of 18, though?
And that's the other, right? And that's why I say nobody can do it without their parents' permission. That's solid. And then I have to look at the drugs, the safety of the drugs, whether there's permanent damage from the... I just don't know. You're rolling your eyes like I shouldn't have... This is an obvious question.
It is an obvious question.
14-year-old driving a car?
I don't think anybody should have cars. I'm a greenie.
Parent consents for the 13-year-old to vote, should we be okay with that? Because the parent said it's okay.
Should we trust the parent for a 13-year-old to vote?
I get that, but why should it be legal for somebody at 13 with parent consent to transition?
Yeah. We could take other examples. We could say, well, the age of consent to sex is going to be 18 or 21 or whatever it is. But if the parents feel otherwise, the parents can sexually molest their kids at any point in time. Do you support that, RFK Jr.? Well, I really don't know. Who am I to say about any of this stuff? I mean, come on, give me a break. We've seen this kind of vacillating, spineless approach to abortion for long. Who am I to say that that's a child? Just take a look at the pictures. Take a look at the pictures and you'll know. He's also, in the past, been pushing this kind of stuff. I played this for you yesterday.
Red state people are more likely to murder you, to impregnate your teenage daughter, to commit a violent crime against you, to commit a nonviolent crime against you, to watch Desperate Housewives on TV, to buy pornography, to buy, degenerate video games like Grand Theft Auto.
Trouble!
Yeah, be very afraid of those red state parents, right? We got trouble right there. Got trouble in those red states. Wow. I don't know. Maybe parents who would transition their kids, maybe they can impregnate their kids if they want to under his regime here. Well, who am I to say? The parents ought to be able to do anything to the kids. He supports parents ripping their kids to pieces while they're alive. It's called abortion by Planned Parenthood. But he supports the live vivisection of babies. So why wouldn't he support child mutilation? By the parents, of course. Okay, because that's what it means to be a parent, isn't it? So today the focus may be on foster care. But how long until the same principles are applied more broadly, questioning the fitness of parents based on their adherence to biblical teaching? And this is already happening in Canada. This is not an extrapolation. This is not saying, you know, we're on a slippery slope. We know where this is. Trudeau is a little bit ahead of Biden on this because Biden's got to go slow. It's an election year. You watch what happens after the election. And I think it'll happen with either Biden or Trump, because Trump was pushing this transgender stuff and the, you know, men and beauty contests and all the rest of the stuff over a decade ago. They're pushing it with fundraisers at Mar-a-Lago. He is just undercover. And Biden is slow walking this to some degree over what he, where he's going to go until after the election. And when Trump gets reelected, same type of thing. You don't have to worry about what you're going to do the next one. If a state can dictate that a child in foster care must be placed in an affirming home, what stops it from declaring that any child expressing confusion over identity must be removed from non-affirming biological parents, as is happening now in Trudeau's Canada? You see? And so even Reason says don't co-parent with Congress. And by this, what they're doing, they're pushing back against this idea that we're going to lock up the internet using ID because we've got to have age verification stuff everywhere. The people who are calling for age verification, in many cases, it's mostly the Republicans who are calling for that. But it's some Democrats who are doing that as well. And they're calling for the ban of TikTok for the same reasons. And they want to use that as a way to usher in IDs to use the internet. And that's why Reason is talking about this. It says you don't need to co-parent with Congress. You don't need to co-parent with your school board or the school. Keep your kids out. Don't co-parent with anybody. When you drop them off at the school, their idea is that you have surrendered your children to the state. They've said that in court decisions. And that the state will act in loco parentis, in place of the parents. This writer at Reason, who is coming at this from a purely secular standpoint, says, I'm the parent of a teenage daughter who does not have any social media accounts. She has lived her life unplugged. I remember very clearly when I decided to institute this policy when she was about 4 years old. We were sitting together in the waiting room of the pediatrician's office, and as usual, I was on my phone sending emails. She wanted to play with my device, and I declined by saying, when you've learned to be comfortable alone with your thoughts, you can play with my phone. Now, that would not be the basis on which I would make that decision, but that's, you know, whatever the reason is. She made that decision, and she was able to stick to it, even though she's got her child in a government school. She said, at age 10, we added a landline for the house, and we bought a laptop for her schoolwork. Strangely, landline phones are making a comeback with Generation Z, thanks to the same 2000s nostalgia, keeping the Scream movie franchise alive. Is that right? Is this our landlines like the new vinyl records or something? I've had vinyl records. I've had landlines. They're not all that great, folks. I mean, the album covers are great. It's nice to have, but you can get a big album cover and still have a nice CD. I certainly do appreciate CDs. But I've had, that reminds me, I've had, and I've been meaning to mention this. I had a listener who sent me a CD, and I got that separated. Two times this has happened. And Karen just brought up the other one, said this is even older. I've had two times that listeners have sent me CDs that they've done of music, and I really wanted to listen to it and to talk to people about it, but I lost the paper got separated from the paperwork that got separated from me. I don't know who they are. And so I wanted to talk about that. But, you know, the other thing about it is that even though I really do prefer CDs, and I've got a big library of CDs and of LPs, I have not set that stuff up since we moved 2 years. I don't have any way to listen to this stuff now. So, taking the drives out of the computers and things like that. So it's something. I've got the hardware. I just haven't had the time to hook it up. But anyway, getting back to the nostalgia thing of landlines, maybe we could get a rotary dial too. That'd be ultra cool, wouldn't it? younger generations are even beginning to self-regulate their screen time by switching to dumb phones and old school flip phones. Well, that's a very healthy thing to do if you don't want to be tracked. But she says there's market solutions for all this stuff. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to mention it. She said, our family purchased the Bark phone. That's B-A-R-K, like a tree bark. The Bark phone for our teen. Bark is one of many cellular devices with parental controls and permissions already built into the operating system. And so she said, kids who have it get to enjoy the social boost of having what looks like an Android or an iPhone. So that's what I'm saying. This parent is concerned about the kid's social boost. they need to learn that lesson too. You don't want social boost. You don't want to be part of that groupthink. And, you know, if you're depending on peer pressure for approval and things like that, that's one lesson they could learn. But she's saying, yeah, they got a phone and so they don't look like, they're an outcast or something. Let them be an outcast. Anyway, she said, however, all app downloads can be set to require parental approval. There are also adjustable monitoring features powered by AI to flag content and conversations that parents might want to know about. It's got a lot of competitors, including Gab, that's with two B's, Gab phones, Troomi, T-R-O-O-M-I, and Pinwheel. I wonder if that's put out by Todd Friel. He says if the government tells you you got to wear pinwheels on your head, you wear pinwheels on your head. Anyway, consumers have a remarkable number of options that contradict the notion that parents are powerless or lack tools to guide their children online and thus require some government help. And that's the key. That's the key. But I wanted to mention those tools as well as the fact that government help in raising your kids, government help in educating your kids, government help in providing sports for your kids, all those things, folks, are traps. They're deadly traps. Avoid them. And so in Austin, there is a fight between a local jurisdiction. And I think this is, again, we talk about this a lot, the importance of local government, how local government can make things better or worse than even than state or especially federal government. We talk about nullification, non-commandeering, all the rest of this stuff. So you have a situation now where Texas, as a state law, has said that there's not going to be any mutilation of minors. They call it gender-affirming care. And so that has been prohibited by the state, but the Austin City Council voted last Thursday to ignore a state law which prohibits gender mutilation and procedures under the age of 18, treating it essentially like tattoos. On May 2nd, the Austin City Council then passed a resolution that purportedly directs the city manager and city employees not to comply with Texas's prohibition of puberty blockers. See, this is something, regardless of where you stand on this issue, it brings up important issues of nullification and non-commandeering. Riddled with problems, the resolution starts with the falsehood that such prohibited treatments have, quote, proven to be evidence-based, medically necessary, and life-saving, none of which is true. It is the policy of the city that no city personnel, funds, or resources shall be used to investigate, to criminally prosecute, or to impose administrative penalties for this minor mutilation. It's actually major mutilation, but it's mutilation of minors. Major mutilation of minors. This is something that it does really bring up issues, because how does the state force them to enforce the state laws, regardless of what the state laws are, regardless of what you think about these things? How does that actually happen? This is why I say all politics is local. And I say, if you're living in Austin, get out of there before God calls in a strike. All politics is local. And so you cannot really effectively force these people to enforce a law that they don't agree with. And this is why I say what I do about the federal, making it a federal law as to when abortion can take place. If you do that, if you restrict it, you will never get the blue states to save babies' lives. They won't say, well, you know, I think the women ought to be able to kill babies up to birth and beyond, but the law says that we can't do that. So I'll obey the law. They're not going to obey the law. Don't be naive about this stuff. And the people who are pushing this on you, the Republican politicians and even some quote-unquote pro-life organizations that are pushing this, are doing this because they want this to be a reason for you to give them money and support. That's why they're doing it. But what will happen is when they restrict it and say, when they allow abortion, the red states, or if you will, I hate to use that term, but the Republican states, will pro-life states, will say, oh, okay, well, there's nothing I can do about it. It's a federal law. It is going to be asymmetric in that regard. That's why I do not support those types of efforts. But again, the most important thing that you can do is to is at the local level. It's more important than state, and it's way more important than federal, because they can make things much better or much worse than the federal or state laws. So that's the fight that's going on there in Austin. And then the education secretary, Miguel Cardona, has had another interesting back and forth before Congress. And this tells us something not only about his moral hypocrisy, his arrogance, but also tells us a great deal about the relationship between Congress and the bureaucracy. Some call it the deep state. How out of control they are and how afraid of them Congress is. So he was asked whether or not he would let boys fight his daughter in sports or undress in front of her in a bathroom at a hearing yesterday. Biden's administration released a finalized rule in April that extends Title IX protection to encompass sexual orientation and gender identity. It does not address by name transgender athletes, but it talks about gender identity. And so you had a Republican representative from Utah, Burgess Owens, former football player, says to this Department of Education head, Cardona, would you force your daughter to undress in the bathroom with boys who are also undressing, he said. Cardona said, I'm not going to be commenting on athletic rules that we haven't yet proposed. Oh, wow. Okay. See, this is an elected member of Congress. He's not only going to not answer him, but he also doesn't care what this guy thinks, because they're the ones writing the rules. Congress does nothing, folks. They hold these types of show hearings, to which you have stonewalling from these bureaucrats who are the real rulers. They write the rules. They are the rulers. The real rulers in Washington are these permanently entrenched bureaucrats. And it doesn't matter who the president is. It doesn't matter who the Congress is, because they're not going to do anything about it except hold hearings. Every day I pull this stuff up. Jim Jordan, oh, I'm going to hold a hearing on that again, too. And it's like, do something. Do something useful. Again, your power is not in holding hearings. Your power is not even in impeachment. Your power is in cutting off the money. And we see this all, I constantly stress how important the money is. That's how they rule. That's how the bureaucracy and the executive branch rules, is with money. And they're allowed to have unlimited amounts of money from Congress. Congress never restricts it. As Scalia told the group of Republican congressmen with Thomas Massie that I talked about yesterday, he said, that's your power. You're the most powerful organization because you can cut off the money. Well, if they don't cut off the money, then the most powerful organization becomes the bureaucracy and the president over the bureaucracy. Because they can bribe people to do, or blackmail people to do anything they want. Then he says, well, if your daughter was reported that she felt uncomfortable in a boy's presence in a bathroom or locker room, would that be considered by your administration to be discrimination or bigotry? Owens said. Again, he declined to provide a yes or no answer. I'm not going to comment on that. I don't have to answer to you. Right? Same type of stuff we saw from the head of the CIA, who was also the Secretary of Defense, Panetta, Leon Panetta. I called him Lion Panetta. When he was asked by Jeff Sessions, before Sessions was the Attorney General, he said, you're going to talk to us before you declare war, before you put troops into Syria, aren't you? Well, Senator, we will consult with our allies in NATO and the UN, and we'll let you know what we decide to do. What? You used to be a congressman. You got to do the Constitution. You got to tell us. We got to vote on this. Well, Congressman or Senator, I will We'll confer with our allies at NATO, and we'll let you know what we decide. That type of thing. This is what these other bureaucrats are saying to Owens. Are you going to, would you be comfortable even if your own child was in this situation? Well, I'm not going to give you any answer. I'm going to write the rules, and then I'll talk about the rules after I've written them. That kind of arrogance. Girls have now entered into contact sports of boxing and wrestling. Would you allow your daughter to physically fight and get beat up by a boy who called himself a girl? Owens asked. Yes or no? Well, I'd be happy to once we finalize our regulations. You're just a congressman. You don't do anything. We have regulation without representation. That's essentially what he's saying. First part he said, once we finalize our regulations, I'll let you know what we decide. Just like putting us in a war, they'll let us know what they decide. And the people in Congress, whether it's the Senate or whether it's the House, they're not going to do anything to stop any of this. These people just shut them down. So we're going to take a quick break before we do. On Rockfin, Father Coughlin, thank you for the tip. The deep state has a history of abusing World War I vets. Remember Hooverville? Yeah, that's right. 1932. That's right. They were asking for the benefits that they were owed and they weren't getting them. Attack dogs, MacArthur and his lackey Eisenhower ordered and beat and burned and killed vets and their kids, camped on the footsteps of the Capitol. Only Smedley Butler objected and supported these vets, stripped of their benefits. Disgusting. Statues versus flesh. I'll take the living people. That's right. They do that, and then they erect statues. You know, we honor these people that we have sent out to die. Whenever I think about that, I always think about the Pirates of Penzance. There's a great, they have the policemen that come in, and they did some satire of the police in that. And then, the pirates are there, and so the major general is sending the police out to go engage the pirates, and the song that they have, these women say, "Go ye heroes, go and die." You know, and it's like, and when you do, we'll weep for you at your grave and all the rest of the stuff, but go ye heroes, go and die. As she starts to sing that, the policemen start to get second thoughts about this, because you should have some second thoughts about that. Make sure that you're fighting in a just cause and a just war. We'll be right back.
Globalist next move. And now, the David Knight Show.
Well, we have a woman who connected with a lot of people, went viral, millions of people. She reacted with disbelief at what JP Morgan's CEO said about the quality of the average American's life, financially speaking. And, of course, Jamie Dimon, or Dimon, depending on your perspective, blasted as being out of touch. He has a net worth of about $2 billion, according to Forbes. He said consumers still have excess money from COVID. That pandemic was a great thing. It gave us, we made out like bandits, didn't we? Well, no, people like him did. The consumer is in pretty good shape right now, he said to an interviewer. And this person who responded to this said, "My jaw dropped at the garbage he was saying. He was so out of touch. This is the largest bank in America, said a person on TikTok. Well, the question is, and I guess this article from Zero Hedge, from QDR's Fringe Finance really is a rhetorical question. Is the economic system being destroyed on purpose? Hans, are we the bad guys? What's this skull on our cap here? I think that is just a rhetorical question. I think we can see that that is exactly what is happening. They talk a little bit about the Cloward and Piven stuff, so I'm not going to go over that. But again, we know that is exactly what is happening. And so what do you do in a situation like this? Well, you prepare. You store up things. And one of the things that you can prepare, especially when they're trying to collapse the economic system, make sure that you've got something that is outside of the economic system that they're trying to collapse. And the thing that is most outside of the economic system that they're trying to collapse is gold. You can physically hold that. Once you get it, what happens to it at that point? They have no idea. You can have complete financial transactional privacy. And so if you want to start preparing for that, a great way to do that is at Wise Wolf Gold. That's Tony Arteban. He's set up David Knight Gold. That'll take you there. You can get gold or silver, small or large transactions. And, of course, he also has a buying group, Wolfpack, that allow you to buy on a regular basis. You can decide how much you want to budget each month to start getting out of this financial system as a hedge, essentially. You know, that's the Zero Hedge talks about that. And, you know, that's where their title for their organization comes from, a hedge to get out of this type of situation. As I was saying earlier in the show, you know, I keep seeing this type of thing, especially at WorldNet Daily. They put up Wayne Allen Root and stuff, and this idea that in 6 months we'll know if we even have a country. This is by Joseph Farah, who is still the editor there. And I absolutely, totally disagree with that. Just as I was talking about what's going on in Austin, everything does not depend on this next presidential election. Look at all of the existential things. Oh, we got to get Trump in because the border is a mess. Did he fix it? No. And he did a couple of very minor things that were not a fix. He had caravans coming in for the first time. He didn't do anything to end DACA or the Dreamer program, did nothing about any of that stuff. And then it, you know, picks right back up in his administration and then accelerated even more with Biden coming back in. Every one of these elections I've seen, the game is to say that this election is the most important thing, you know, most important election of your life. And it is really important. And if we really believe that, that is the path to civil war. Because you're going to say, well, in 6 months, we know if we still have a country or if we're going to be in a civil war. And that's the danger of all this stuff that is happening with Trump. You know, we look at the trial and everybody wants to talk about, I'm not going to talk about, you know, what Stormy Daniels had to say. I didn't even want to read it, you know, and it's a bunch of salacious, disgusting stuff, just as you would expect from both of them, both from her and from him. And the reason that's being done is because the Republican people are locked in behind Trump and the Democrats are locked in against him. And so what they're trying to do, they're fighting over the independents. And the purpose of this trial is to show his character to the independents and get them to be completely revolted by it. And I don't know if that's going to work or not. His purpose in trolling the judge and acting like a toddler in court and outside of it with his, you know, he keeps getting these contempt orders and fines against him. He likes that. And he is goading this judge to try to get him to throw him in jail. That's his best hope, quite frankly, going to jail. That would give him the upper hand. As all of this stuff has. This is why there was no primary this time. All these people are saying, you know, if I think this may be the last election that we have. Folks, it's not an election. There's no debates. There's no primaries for either one of these candidates. There was no competition. There was no election. The election rigging starts with who you have to choose from, right? And how did they rig it? Well, they rigged it with these trials and everything. Biden is rigging it in his perspective to try to, demonize Trump. Trump is playing the victim card. And once he starts playing that, nobody's talking about any policy. He doesn't have to debate anything with DeSantis or anybody else. It's all about that. And so the thing he would like to have the most is to be thrown into jail, because then everybody would be talking about how over the top that is. And it would be over the top. Get him, he can play the victim card, and they don't have to talk about any policies or anything. And they don't have to talk about what he did with Stormy Daniels. This is the game they're playing. And I'm disgusted with all this. And I'm disgusted with the people who put this stuff out like this. This is what Joseph Fair went on to say. Democrats have been engineering this coup. They rigged the institutions to cover their tracks from the media, the law schools, Hollywood, public education, and so forth. And exactly, Joseph, what has the Republican Party done about any of this stuff over your lifetime or mine? Nothing. Have they done anything about this? Absolutely nothing. The GOP in Washington has done nothing about all of these things. This has been going on for decades. Now we've been captured by the deep state. And we only have one shot left, and his name is Donald Trump. This is disgusting fanboy delusion. Only he has the courage, experience, and fortitude to do this. I'll pause here so you can vomit. Isn't that disgusting? And think back to Reagan. Think back to Reagan. And then he's got some quotes from Ronald Reagan. Well, why don't you think back to Trump? He's been president. Didn't he say anything notable? Well, as a matter of fact, he didn't. He's just throwing insults at other people. He has nothing to say about philosophy, principles, policy, nothing. He's just throwing insults at other people. But he quotes Reagan, who says, as government expands, liberty contracts. Well, that's right. But, you know, Reagan didn't do anything about the expansion of government into the Department of Education, which happened during an election year. He said he was going to get rid of it. Instead, he grew it for the next 8 years. So government expanded and liberty contracted in education. It's the Department of Education's bribing everybody to and blackmailing everybody to do what they want to do. Put these boys in the girls' bathrooms and all the rest of this stuff. Reagan told us Republicans believe every day is the 4th of July, but the Democrats believe every day is April the 15th. Oh, yeah. Republicans are going to cut our taxes a little bit. Or the Republicans are going to get rid of the IRS. Will the Republicans stop the IRS from growing becoming seven times bigger with this latest thing? Well, you know, when Kevin McCarthy was there, he was going to just, Biden wanted to grow it by a factor of seven. McCarthy said, let's only grow it by a factor of five. Now you got traitor Machiavellian Mike there, and Johnson wants to grow it back to seven. He's back to growing it, making it, we're going to jump it to seven times the size it is. They're not going to restrict the taxes. They're going to increase the tyranny of the IRS. That's even worse than raising taxes. Because the purpose of this, arming them with artificial intelligence, is to take everything from everybody. Just accuse people of stuff, just like the toll roads in Texas accused us of using the toll roads. They accused people of anything they want. And then he says a nation that cannot control its borders is not a nation. Reagan said that. Do you remember that Reagan gave amnesty to the illegal aliens? Folks, this is a charade. Whether you're talking about Reagan or you're talking about Trump, they don't share your concerns. The local level is where you have to go. But he finishes with this. Reagan's gone, but thankfully Trump lives on. Wow. Wow. Well, you know, he was given the day off to go to his son's graduation by this judge. But he's going to be heading a Republican fundraiser. And again, he played the victim card, which is, you know, what he does with all this stuff. Oh, I can't even go to my son's graduation, as I said at the time. Did your child miss their graduation in 2020? Because Trump locked down the schools and the graduations. Did that happen to you in 2020? Even worse. Did your child die and not graduate because of the Trump shots and the Trump juice? You know, talk to me about going to your son's graduation at this elitist school, and you're going to spend the bulk of the day raising money at a fundraiser in Minnesota while your son's graduating in Florida. Yeah, he can make the flight on his private jet, 3 hours and 45-minute flight from West Palm Beach to where he's going to be raising money in Minnesota. But he's been playing the victim card. Who will explain for me to my wonderful son, Baron, who is a great student at a fantastic school, that his dad will likely not be allowed to attend his graduation ceremony? Something we've been talking about for years, because a seriously conflicted and corrupt New York state judge wants me in criminal court on a bogus Biden case, which according to all, virtually all legal scholars and pundits, has no merit and should never have been brought. Well, again, maybe you could use this graduation as an opportunity to talk to your son about morality. You think about it? Yeah. Well, son, this is what happened with Stormy Daniels, and this is why I was cheating on your mom, but don't you do that, okay? You want to do a mea culpa about that, Trump? You want to have a heart-to-heart talk with Barron about what you have done? Oh, that's right. You didn't do anything wrong. That's right. Any of your sins don't count, because you're a billionaire. You're just like Michael Bloomberg, going to buy your way into heaven. Bloomberg's going to buy his way in with his gun control stuff, and you're going to buy your way in by pointing out to God how many MAGA people just love you. And, you know, some of them go to church, too. Yeah, how about that? Jack Posobiec called the judge's decision not to let Trump go to his son's graduation, which now he's going to be allowed to do. But before, he called it pure evil. Eric Trump called it heartless. Carrie Lake called it both heartless and cruel. And Mike Lee said it was deliberately cruel. Except that Trump paid bureaucrats to keep your kids from being able to go to college graduation. He paid pharmaceutical companies tens of billions of dollars and delivered the poisonous Kool-Aid. You know, Alex Jones says it's just sugar water. Come on, you can take that for Trump. You can do it. Do it for Trump. And, Jonestown cult. Trump paid $250 million to the Ad Council, the biggest ad campaign they've ever had, to convince people to inject the Kool-Aid, the sugar water, the poison. And you got now a common thing, as I just mentioned yesterday, somebody that Karen's brother knows, his son, a young teenage son, athlete's got myocarditis, and they're still lying about it. They're still saying, it's no problem. Son can do whatever he wants. It's treatable. Everybody's got it now. Oh, really? Is that evil? Is that pure evil? Is that heartless? Is that cruel? Are those things heartless and evil and cruel? I think they are. There's absolutely no way I would ever support Donald Trump for dog catcher. I want him for jail. 20 to 24 years in jail, as the bumper sticker says. Well, RFK Jr. has been invited to the Libertarian Convention to speak as well. And he's accepted as well. I guess I'm sure they invited Biden, but Biden doesn't know how to speak. So he won't be there. They're both going to be addressing the Libertarian Convention that's going to be in Washington, D.C. And so RFK Jr. Would like to debate Trump on this. He said, you really should have a debate. He said, people are upset that you blew up the deficit, that you shut down their businesses during COVID, that you filled your administration with swamp creatures. So I'd like to make you an offer. It is perfectly neutral territory, the LP convention, for you and me to have a debate where you can defend your record for your wavering supporters. Well, he's absolutely right about that. But of course, we also know where RFK Jr. is coming from. He really, besides his moral pedophaging about child mutilation, he also said this about the Green New Deal. He loves the Green New Deal.
Oh, you know, that all of the modeling for climate change indicates that we're going to be facing superstorms, storms on steroids, droughts, you know, famine, the disappearance of the ice caps, the disappearance of glaciers on every continent, and that it's going to be, you know, there's going to be major disruptions, not just to humanity, but ultimately to civilization. And this is part of the cost that we're paying for our long-time deadly addiction to coal and oil. Endorsement.
What about AOC's new Green Deal? What do you think about that?
I think
Green New Deal, excuse me.
I think the Green New Deal is, you know, all of that stuff is important, it's good, we ought to be pursuing it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Because if we don't, the world's going to end. That's where he's coming from. Yeah, let's have a debate on that. But let's get somebody who actually knows what they're talking about instead of Trump. I'd hate to see Trump try to debate him on the Green New Deal. He's, all against this CO2 stuff. As a matter of fact, we all ought to start breathing. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Christopher Willis. He is with an organization called Latitude, and we're going to talk about relocating from one country to another. I think it'll be an interesting conversation. We can talk about the why, the where, the what is it, how do you do it, things like that. Because a lot of people, as you see this frequently in the media, a lot of people are looking at this stuff, and we always have this issue, don't we? Of a fight or flight. Do I get out of here? Am I going to be a pilgrim, or am I going to be a Puritan and stick around? And so we'll talk a little bit about what they do and how this is all set up. We'll talk with Chris Willis right after this break. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Joe, we've got a problem.
Who are you?
It's the new mug they're selling at thedavidknightshow.com, right? So basically, a mug is something that holds liquid, right? Because basically you can't hold coffee with your hands, right?
It's Scantley, but anyone tries to mug me, I'm be ready for it. You dog-faced pony soldier.
They say the mug can help patriots drink coffee, then save the world. This could be bad for us.
Save the world? But we own the world. These people, they're supporting free speech with every mug they buy. Come on. These people, I tell you, well, anyway.
You're listening to The David Knight Show. Listening to the David Knight Show.
All right, and joining us now is Christopher Willis, and Chris is a managing partner of Latitude Caribbean and managing director of Latitude Consultancy. He's been involved in immigration industry since 1995. He's got a long list of credentials and organizations he's been in, and I'm not going to go through all of that because I want to get to what is happening right now. A lot of people are very concerned about what's happening in our government here in America and the European Union and other things. There's recently the EU has started cracking down on people who are trying to leave. We've also had, if you've followed, I haven't really covered it, but you've got one guy that was nicknamed Bitcoin Jesus who used Bitcoin to relocate to Europe. He was just arrested in Spain and is going to be extradited to the United States because the IRS is after him, saying that he transferred. He didn't report all of his Bitcoin holdings and things like that. So I want to talk about this. Is it something that is only for the rich? What do people have to do if they want to do this? Why would they go to particular places and how this stuff works? So joining us now is Chris Willis. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting trend right now in the U.S., you know, with Americans looking at getting a second residence or citizenship, because typically this wasn't on their radar. But, you know, there's been a confluence of events, you know, over the last few years that sort of led people to start looking at this as a viable option. And, you know, it's important to note that it doesn't necessarily mean you have to leave the U.S., but it's more having the option to leave should you be dissatisfied with the direction that the country is going. Obviously, it's getting, you know, closer and closer to the election, and people, no matter where you sit, you know, have very strong opinions of how they'd like to see the direction of the U.S. And if it doesn't go your way, then, you know, half the country is going to be unhappy. So they're looking at different alternatives. And
So in the past, you've seen this because of taxes or stuff like that. But, you know, after what happened in 2020, a lot of people are looking at this and saying, and I have listeners in Africa that said, hey, everybody here was fine with this pandemic stuff. Nobody was freaking out about it. It was the Europeans who were freaking out and the Americans who were freaking out about it. After they left, everything was fine.
Well, you raise a good point. I mean, the pandemic was really the kicker to a lot of this, because you'll remember when there was the travel ban, right? So it didn't matter who you were. If you only had a U.S. passport, you know, your wings were clipped and you were grounded. And so a lot of, you know, particularly the family office.
Did we lose him? Did it freeze up here?
You've got to fix it.
Okay, we're back. We're back. It froze up for a moment. We lost that last bit. What you said? You said if you only got one passport, what was it you said after that?
So the with the pandemic is people were grounded. You know, they didn't matter who you were. If you only had a U.S. passport, then you weren't able to travel. And so when we're speaking to a lot of family offices, you know, the feedback they're getting from their family principals is, you know, you've got to fix this gap. You know, we were exposed here, and we don't want this to be a problem again in the future if there was a similar situation.
Yeah. And it is also important, I think, in many cases to have what I'd call residential ambiguity. They tend to work with you differently if you're actually a citizen than if you've got a different citizenship somewhere. I remember when I was in high school, I went with some friends to Europe. And it was like a music organization we were touring. But we had a day off, and we decided that we're going to ride bicycles around London. And the guy who rented the bicycles to us said, well, you're not allowed to ride these things to the park, but since you're Americans, you can probably get away with it. So we did. And we had a very angry Bobby who flagged us down. He was ready to give us fines or handcuffs or whatever. We weren't doing anything crazy. I mean, we weren't trying to run people over. We were very, very calm, but we're just calmly riding through. And as soon as we started talking to him, he goes, oh, you're Americans. Okay, well, you're not allowed to do that here. I know you didn't know that, but we'll just walk it out of here and you'll be fine. That's the type of thing, you know, where if you have these other residencies, that can kind of give you a little bit of an out sometimes, I think. That's what I mean by residential ambiguity.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, you raise a good point, because I'll go back to the pandemic. In the Caribbean in particular, most of the islands closed their borders unless you were a citizen, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I give you an example of someone who had a multimillion dollar property in Jambi Bay in Antigua and thought, you know, I'll go hang out there during the pandemic, but never took out citizenship. Wow. So, you know, he was turned away. He wasn't able to travel and go and spend time in his home. So it's that preparedness. And you know, to be fair, people didn't expect something of the nature of the pandemic to kick in. So they didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
Typically, as an American, you can hop on a plane and go anywhere, right?
Yeah.
But suddenly these challenges put themselves on the front foot, and people had to make some adjustments.
Well, now, you know, I'm looking at this golden passport. The cost escalates to $200,000 on EU crackdown. What is a golden passport, first of all?
So the term golden passport, or, you know, there's a lot of media spin on how these are portrayed. But in the Caribbean, you have what's called citizenship by investment. So in exchange for making either a donation to the government or purchasing approved real estate, then you can receive citizenship in exchange.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what's been happening is the European Union has been making some noises about how they would like to see some enhancements, let's say, to the programs in the Caribbean. And one of that was increasing the minimum investment level. So right now it sits at 100,000 US, and there's been what's called a memorandum of agreement, which was signed by four of the five Caribbean governments, which agreed to raise the floor from 100 to 200,000. And that's scheduled to be effective June 30th of this year. The sort of one outstanding countries indicated they will be signing as well. So the expectation is that the minimum investment level will start at 200,000 instead of the current of 100.
Wow. Oh, they're going to double it. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. When I was looking at this years ago, I remember looking at some of these. Belize had like 25,000 back in the 90s, and New Zealand, and all the, you know, you had golden passport. You could get to a lot of different countries. Sometimes they would have other restrictions, but for the most part, it was just if you could put that much money into the country. Is this something that only the very rich can do, though? Is there anything that people can do that is, you know, to get citizenship somewhere without a big stash of cash?
Yeah, the only other real way is through descent, and we have a division that specializes in this. So if, you know, if you had ancestral links, then that could be a pathway. And, you know, I remember one client we were speaking to who was looking at the Malta program in Europe, you know, which cost about €1 million, give or take. And, you know, having discussions with them, their surname sounded Italian. So we dug a bit deeper, found out they were eligible through descent. So they got their Italian citizenship, which then gave them full access to the European Union and saved them €1 million, right? So he was over the moon.
Yeah.
So it's another way that you can do it. But the programs we focus on, David, are typically, you know, for your high net worth, ultra high net worth. For the mass affluent and such, there are other programs, but typically they'll have a residency component involved as well. So it's important to distinguish between residency and citizenship. So the Caribbean programs I spoke about are a direct pathway to citizenship. So that leads to a passport. Other programs, you know, very much like in the US, you have a green card, right? So that type of concept would apply in places like Canada, Portugal, Spain, Greece, where, you know, you have a permanent residency, but to graduate or upgrade to citizenship, you have to meet certain criteria, which is typically time and day count.
So if you can get somewhere and you can afford to, and sometimes the cost of living is significantly less, we can talk a little bit about that, but if you can get somewhere and establish residency, you might be able to get in without the golden passport based on time that you're there, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, and there's, you know, there's a multitude of programs, you know, I mean, I'm in Canada, for example, where, you know, especially around the U.S. Election, many Americans look to sort of take a hop up north and spend time in Canada. So we sort of joke Canada's immigration website crashes usually the day after the election because so many people are looking at it.
Yeah, a lot of people promise which way the, depending I know who wins, half the country's going to want to get out.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things that there's many other routes, but a way people could qualify, you know, whether it's through setting up a business, whether it's through a spousal relationship, whether it's through being a skilled worker, for example. But for our focus, it is by investment and or by descent are the two areas that we focus on, David.
I see. Let me ask you this. I mean, is that I know a lot of people are wanting to get out of the United States because of what they've seen with the pandemic. And because of what is happening with politics, but of course the same type of issues are there in Europe as well. And, I guess, you know, Bloomberg piece, that's talking about the cost of the golden passport soaring in the Caribbean, how it's going to double in just a few months here. They also mentioned cryptocurrency. And that's one of the things, when you have, they just recently had a debate, between some gold bugs and some cryptocurrency people. One of the things they were saying was, you know, it makes it easier for us to exit. But there also seems to be, an attempt to crack down on that as well, make an example out of, the guy they call Bitcoin Jesus. He had some cryptocurrency that he did not declare, evidently. That's what the IRS is alleging. And so they contacted the Spanish government to arrest him and to extradite him for the IRS over his cryptocurrency holdings. Now that's kind of a more aggressive aspect of it as well. Talk a little bit about that and, you know, how the issues in terms of if you've got money to buy a citizenship or if you want to establish residency, the issues of trying to get your money out of the jurisdiction here.
Yeah, there's two elements to that. I mean, the first one is the due diligence source of wealth, source of funds is a key component to all of these, making sure they understand, you know, how your wealth was generated and that everything was done in a legal manner. What we're seeing for people who are in the crypto space is that, you know, your crypto wallet can be used in terms of source of funds. However, they still need to demonstrate how they acquired the funds that led to that initial crypto investment. So it's going that far back just to make sure it was all done in the proper ways. But it's in particular in the Caribbean, they won't accept crypto directly. So it would still have to be converted to US banking and, you know, values in the Caribbean are still very traditional. So they haven't quite advanced to that stage yet, but certainly there are opportunities for people who have their wealth in the crypto space. And it's, you know, and as you rightly say, many more people are looking at this saying, how can we use our crypto funds to manage this, but it's still evolving. Some countries have certainly said that they want to explore how they can attract the crypto market and make it as, you know, removing barriers, if you like, in terms of making investment. But the key thing here, as I mentioned, is the due diligence. So anybody who's applying for any of these programs needs to understand that not only the source of wealth, source of funds, but, you know, your personal background, what's in the public domain, everything that's advised on the forms or declared on the forms will be verified, mm-hmm. as well as final sort of international checks, you know, with Interpol, Europol, watch list, sanctions list, all that good stuff. So it isn't just a question of here's my money, thank you very much. You still have to go through this process of evaluation.
Right, right. And that's what you do. You help people to go through what I imagine is a real maze of regulations, a lot of hoops and a lot of vetting and all that kind of stuff that has to go through, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing is we have our first consultation where we have to understand the client, make sure we understand their motivations and their needs, and then we can suggest which programs might be best suited. And then we have to dig a little bit deeper into their background to make sure there won't be anything that would stop them qualifying.
Mm-hmm. Where are you seeing people coming from mostly and going to in your practice?
Well, I mean, we're fortunate that we've got 23 offices around the world, so we're dealing with people with very different profiles. As we spoke about at the beginning, you know, Americans weren't typically a major source market because you had these freedoms already. You could get on a plane and go. But if you were from Nigeria, if you were from Pakistan, if you were from South Africa, you know, you need a visa to pretty well get anywhere, right? So. Mm-hmm. The mobility aspect here was key. So if suddenly you were going, let's say, from Pakistan.
So you're saying if you're going from Pakistan and that froze up, so you can pick up from there.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So if I was going, so a citizen of Pakistan, for example, can go to 39 countries visa-free. And if they invest into the Caribbean, suddenly that jumps to 157, which includes, you know, the Schengen area, the UAE, Singapore, places like that. So it's the mobility, the enhancing of mobility is key for people from these regions. And so that's a key motivation for them. But again, if you're American, you can go to those places anyway. The key attraction for Americans is looking to enhance their freedoms by having another option. So it's all about, you know, as many options as you can, you know, in the sort of volatile world we're living in. Mm-hmm. And it's actually becoming a little bit more of a status symbol, you know, for many Americans. You know, it's not the car you drive or the watch on your wrist. It's, you know, what passport's in your pocket, you know, and knowing that you can access different parts of the world with all of this. So it's becoming more mainstream, as we spoke about at the beginning. And I think that's a key thing, that as more and more people understand what the benefits are. And for the wealthy, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, they'll spend that on a week's holiday, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's whereas, you know, citizenship's for life, and this is something they can pass on to their kids, you know, so it's, again, with a lot of the family offices, we speak to the succession planning and making sure that, you know, they've got this angle covered. You know, it's a very straightforward and practical solution.
Let me ask you, because you're talking about having visa requirements and things like that and being able to expand that from moving from one citizenship to another one. The visa requirements are starting to increase, as I've noticed. The United States and even the EU are starting to add additional visa requirements. Talk a little bit about that. I think the European Union is going to start having some visa requirements for Americans. Is that correct?
Yeah, so they're going to have, like many countries, have an electronic travel authority, if you like, so that you still have to, you'll essentially be given it, but you have to apply, right, to show that you've been pre-qualified to come in. So you have that in Canada, you have that for people going to the U.S. It's not an uncommon thing, but it's something that the EU is looking to roll out. I think they were looking to get it out this year. It's probably rolling into 2025 now. With the European Union introducing this, and I think the rolling it out is what's causing them a lot of problems right now. That's why it's continually getting delayed. But what it obviously gives them is access to data, mm-hmm. right, which is being able to track people, manage people, and to ensure that anybody or bad actors or undesirables, you know, are getting picked up mm-hmm. At these early stages.
Now, you mentioned passing this on to your children. Talk a little bit mm-hmm. about that in terms of, you know, we are familiar with how, you know, we have situations with open borders and immigration and, you know, how citizenship is essentially claimed or passed on here. What are the types of situations that you see in other countries? I mean, is it, is there any other country that just lets you go across the border and just kind of hang out, or, you know, like we do here, or is everybody else kind of policing their borders, I imagine, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting tighter and tighter. And one of the things why the very, very popular, even though it's the most, it's very expensive, you know, at about €1 million, which is non-recoverable. It gives you access to the European Union and, of course, all the settlement rights. So even though you're a citizen of Malta, you could go, you know, live, work, study, retire in any of the other member states.
Mm-hmm.
So that's attractive to many people, especially an American who says, well, I want to like for like. You know, so, you know, the Caribbean is great, but it's not necessarily the lifestyle that I want, and or having access to resources. So that's why Europe is always an attractive alternative. But not everybody, you know, has the funds to do it. So the Caribbean is a nice sort of happy medium. It's also geographically much closer, familiar to many people. And, you know, which is why it's a very popular option, especially because the processing is also much quicker. It takes about six to eight months, give or take, whereas Malta is going to take about 18 months.
And so when somebody gets citizenship legitimately, legally in one of these countries, they can pass that on to their children generally, or I imagine there's some.
Yeah. So basically, if you were, let's say it was, you know, your nuclear family, mom, dad, two kids, you know, the kids would get it, and that's not an issue. In some cases, you can include a sibling if they're unmarried and have no kids. You can include your parents or your grandparents. You know, the family unit or the definition of a family unit can be expanded to allow more people to be included on one application. So there's each country has its own rules and how they define independent, but they're trying to be as competitive as possible to include as many people as they can.
So let me ask you about reciprocity. You know, we've been talking about the legal process here. If an American wants to get on a raft Caribbean or whatever. Is that a thing that is happening in their country? I mean, we see that happening in the EU. We see it happening in the US extensively. Is that anything that's happening in the other direction, or do they clamp down on that extensively?
Yeah, it's not really. I mean, you're right. You know, people coming into the US, the UK is having a big issue with that right now, with people coming over from mainland Europe on boats and then arriving in the United Kingdom. Europe, of course, has had that for many years, in particular with people starting their journeys in North Africa and, you know, typically ending up in the southern tip of Italy. So there's a lot of challenges around that. Again, it's a reinforcement of the amount of migration that goes on around the world, whether through displaced people or the wealthy people are moving around, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in terms of, you know, the profile of person we're speaking to, you know, they're looking to give themselves as many options should they need them. Because not everybody, you know, someone may have a citizenship in the Caribbean and they say, yeah, it's great. I'm going to pop down there, maybe buy a house and hang out, you know, a couple of months or a couple of weeks of the year, especially when it gets cold, let's say in up north. And then that's good enough for them. But for other people, they want to actually move. They want to settle there. They want to live there. They want to raise their family there. So it goes back to my earlier point that, you know, we need to understand the client and what the motivations are. And then we can see what program is best suited for them.
When somebody wants to establish residency, I mean, how complicated is that? Do they just need to, is there a legal process that you help people with that? If they don't get citizenship, are there still issues preventing them from buying property or something like that in many of these places?
Yeah, you tend to have, you know, in some countries it's called an alien landholding tax, or they'll have additional taxes for non-citizens if mm-hmm. you're looking to go into buy. Varies from country to country. Many people understand the concept of buying real estate, so those programs have been quite popular. But it's, you know, the residency, of course, is there. It's not for life. You've got to renew it, or you've got to upgrade to citizenship. That's mm-hmm. why a lot of people like citizenship programs, because it is for life.
Yeah. Let me ask you another thing, too, about since we're talking, I think, momentarily here about kind of reciprocity, Americans going to other countries like that. Is there anything in any of these other countries for political asylum for somebody that is coming from Europe or Canada or the United States or something? Do any of them have political asylum programs?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, most countries, I mean, that you look at places like Canada, the United States, European countries, the UK, will all, you know, look to take a certain amount of asylum seekers or refugees per year. The biggest challenge, of course, is determining are they genuine, right? Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. they'll have their own different protocols to establish that. You know, there was the Safe Third Country Agreement between Canada and the U.S. for a while, which has been adjusted. But, you know, they're making sure that they can understand quickly, is this a genuine refugee? Because part of the strategy in the past was that they would, you know, get on a plane, flush their passport down the toilet, turn up and say, you know, the only in the system for 4 or 5 years, right? Until they can be adjudicated upon. So that's something a lot of these countries are looking to tidy up. But with the amount of displaced people and pressures in developing countries, it's becoming, you know, quite the issue to be able to manage.
Yeah. And it's pretty easy for people in a war-torn country to try to make a case for political asylum, even though they don't always get it. I would imagine it'd be a lot harder for somebody that is, you know, coming from the United States to try to make a case for political asylum to go to, you know, one of these other. And I would imagine that perhaps it wouldn't even be considered in most countries that would be politically friendly to the United States. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, it's to define, you know, being a person at risk and therefore eligible for asylum, it's quite a high bar to hit. Mm-hmm, and, you know, the United States, someone saying, oh, I'm being politically persecuted for my beliefs. It's, again, many people, you know, it's hard to say, right? It'd be hard to have that proven. So, but some people will try it on. Of course they will, right? And we've seen examples where people have tried, I think, more of a PR stunt than anything else, you know, to say, you know, I want to be considered. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it takes away from genuine refugees who have.
Yeah. In other countries. Yeah. We just had a case here I was talking about earlier where, there was a family coming from Germany, homeschooling family, and they were given asylum about 10 years ago because the Germans were going to take away they were Christians. They wanted to homeschool the kids. Mm-hmm. Germans were going to take away their kids. They got asylum here. But because of the change in political regime, the Biden administration decided that they wanted to deport them. So that became something of an issue. So that's always the case. And I guess if you get political asylum somewhere, it's always subject to the whims of whatever the current political regime is, I guess. It's kind of a shaky.
Oh, absolutely. It's you know, and I've worked with people with this profile in the past, and you know, when you're speaking to a genuine asylum seeker or a genuine refugee, I mean, you understand the difference between, you know, what they've gone through and how they should be afforded protection, as opposed to some people who are just sort of trying it on and hoping for the best, because you know, for people like you and I, it's unimaginable.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, if somebody can afford to do it, it is certainly going to be going up quite a bit. And, just the next few months are going to be doubling it. So there's always a constantly closing window on all these different things that are happening everywhere. Even if it is open for you at this point in time, it may be closing pretty soon. Was there anything else that you would tell us, that we didn't cover about this that, I think people would be interested?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and you touched on a good point, because Canada just, you know, closed up their self-employed category with a day's notice. You know, wow. Ireland and the UK have done similar things. Portugal changed their program. So there's, you're right. If you qualify today and it's something you want to do, you know, don't delay too long, because the goalposts could change.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're expecting, you know, potentially changes of government in the United Kingdom, in Canada and the United States this year, right? So that could change, you know, the direction of those three countries and therefore their immigration policies as well. You know, we're also seeing pressures from the European Union and the Caribbean and in other jurisdictions. So again, that could impact their policy making decisions as it relates to immigration. And as we've seen in the U.S., immigration is always a key political topic when it comes to elections. So my advice to people is, if you qualify today, you know, get it done. It's in your back pocket. You know, you've got it. You know, better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it, right? So yeah. Get that done, tucked away. And then if things change, then at least you've taken care of yourself and your family.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly we don't see freedom increasing anywhere in the globe. And everybody seems to be closing everything down. So if you've got any plans, now's the time to make your preparations, because it seems like globally everything is shutting down. Even in the Caribbean, they're shutting stuff down. That's amazing. But it's very interesting to talk to you about that. And thank you so much for what you do. Christopher Willis, again, Latitude Caribbean and Latitude Consultancy. And tell us your website here. I'm looking at the website, and latitudeworld.com. Is that the best place to find you? People are looking for
absolutely, yeah. Latitudeworld.com. Okay. You go into the team, you'll find my details. Please reach out and be happy to have a conversation to see how we can help you.
That's great. Thank you very much, Chris. Great talking to you. Very interesting. Folks, we'll be right back. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. Well, it's always interesting. Again, it's something that is extremely expensive. If you have a high net worth, it's something you may want to consider. But as global governance is being ushered in, it's cutting down more and more the difference between different jurisdictions. But there still will be a difference there. And as I said, sometimes if you've got residential ambiguity, if you're a citizen of another country, or you can pull that, that might buy you a little bit of grace. But then again, who knows? I want to talk a little bit about the pandemic issues here. And I mentioned this, of course, we've now gone a full 24 hours without me seeing a new article about the pandemic bird flu and how you should be afraid of all this. But I just wanted to pass this on. I was very concerned about how they keep pushing this, and we'll do the same thing with other so-called pandemics. And so I took what I said yesterday about the questions about bird flu that you should be asking, questions about the actions of the USDA and the FDA coming after our food supply with this stuff and wanting to vaccinate every single farm animal. That is a big plan for the big pharmaceutical companies. And so I wanted to put this up on Substack. We did that as a separate article. And I also put it at the top because I'm like, if you find this useful, take it, copy it. I don't care if you give me attribution for it or not, but I think we need to get people to start thinking critically about this stuff. So the questions that I had yesterday, things like, why are they focusing on cows? Well, because of meat and dairy. If they're going to look in cow's milk, why aren't they looking in the chicken's eggs and this type of stuff, right? If they want to try to scare people about the food supply, why wouldn't you scare people about the eggs if you're talking about bird flu and you're killing chickens? And why are they not looking at chicken meat? Why are they looking at cow meat? Why are they looking specifically at ground beef rather than looking at steaks? A lot of these types of things. So I got a whole list of questions that you'll see there on Substack. I'm not going to read them to you again. Even questions about the so-called transmission to other animals, transmission to humans. Is any of this stuff real? And so I think there's some things there. Grab those, put them up on social media if you want. You know, it's important to let people know about the show if you find it to be helpful. But it's also important to just as an individual ask these questions. Why aren't you looking at the food products from chickens if it's bird flu? Why are you looking at the beef? Is it because you want to ban meat and dairy? You know, that type of thing, which is a rhetorical question. But we need to popularize that, I think. And so that's one of the reasons why I put that up on Substack. As we look at the pandemic treaty, of course, it was good to see that Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who has been the boldest. Again, I'd like to see these people do more, but I'll give him credit for doing more than anybody else has done. He's had several hearings where he's brought in people who are vaccine injured. He's gone far, far beyond anything that anybody else has done in terms of pushing back against this bioweapon, the vaccine, and things like that. On Rumble, Freegan says American farmers need to start spraying poop on politicians' houses. Well, that's probably going to come if they start doing this. We'll have to see what happens with it. But that's almost like Coles to Newcastle, isn't it? They are already pure Bolshevik. But Ron Johnson is concerned about this power play by the WHO. And so he has contacted other GOP senators, and he's done a good job. He has gotten all 49 GOP senators to essentially sign a letter to call on Biden to withdraw support for the WHO pandemic treaty. Not to withdraw support for the WHO. I mean, that's maybe a bridge too far. They can't get that done. But at least if they're going to put forward another treaty, they need to know that this is going to be down partisan lines. And even if any Democrats don't defect on this, they're still going to be 9 votes short of what they need for ratification. And yet, when I saw this headline, it concerned me because I thought, why are they calling on Biden? Why don't they just put together a letter and say, oh, by the way, anything that you send to us is going to be dead on arrival. And so I wanted to see exactly what they had said to them about this. And here's what they said. This is Senator Ron Johnson tweeting this out. He said, 2 international agreements are being considered at this month's World Health Assembly that surrenders U.S. sovereignty to the WHO. Spot on. Exactly right. He says the president should reject them or at least submit any agreement to the Senate as a treaty. Wait a minute. He doesn't have to submit it as a treaty. You need to call him out that it's a treaty. And so I think this is something, you know, we talk about action items. Again, you know, send these questions about this bird flu narrative. You know, put these questions around on social media. That's going to have more effect, I think, than anything that you can do to send to elected officials. However, they do look at the volume of things that they get. And I think at this point in time, it would be very useful for us to remind them that under the Constitution, any treaty is required to be voted on by the Senate. And it is a treaty. Whether Biden calls it a treaty and gives it to them or not, it is a treaty. A treaty is an agreement between these different countries, and that's what they're trying to negotiate there. I know that when we were talking about this before, some people said, well, is this a WHO treaty? Are we making a treaty with a WHO? Because you can't make a treaty with a non-governmental organization. But what the WHO is doing is it is the coordinator. And so what it is saying is that all of these countries have agreed on this agenda or on this whatever they want to call it. They can call it a variety of different things. They had the North American Free Trade Agreement. That was a treaty. You can call it like an agenda, as they did the Paris Climate Agenda. But it's always a treaty. And so, and what the WHO is doing is organizing, facilitating, but they're presenting it as an agreement, as a treaty between all these different countries that are there. And so it needs to be called out. The people in the Senate, and I would start by sending stuff to Senator Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, who organized this stuff, that they need to call this out, and they need to say that anything that is an international agreement has to be ratified by the Senate as a treaty, because that's what it is. NAFTA was that. Climate agreement at Paris was that. And it is an absolute crime that you didn't have Mitch McConnell basically shut that thing down. You know, he was there from 2015 to not say we're going to have a vote on the Paris Climate Accord. For John Kerry to say Barack Obama and I have self-ratified this, That's absolute nonsense. That's why I said we don't want to see that happen again with a pandemic treaty. So they got 49 people, all Republicans against it. But do they have the backbone to stand and call it what it is, which is a treaty, and to say that we have to ratify it? It isn't getting together and passively asking Biden to do it. That's a very bad strategy. It's like a president saying, well, I really would like for the Supreme Court to do this or that. No, you do it yourself. You got the use the powers that you've got instead of just virtue signaling and saying, I really care. You know, we got this hearing. We've got this letter. No, you are the ones who need to vote on this stuff. Don't pass the buck off to somebody else. And so the WHO, the WHO, has a WHA, the WHA, the what? I wonder if they got a WHEN as well. they've got a WEF, the World Economic Forum. The WHA is the decision-making body of this non-governmental abomination. That's what we should start calling them instead of an organization, abomination, the NGO. That the Sovereignty Coalition put out a statement about this, said the term pandemic accord is used for the pandemic treaty. And again, these are semantics. They are synonyms, and they are the same thing. So we need to understand that. Meanwhile, in Canada, we have a Christian chiropractor who is fighting a $65,000 fine because he refused to wear a mask. And this was, you know, the mask rules were back in 2020. And last year, these rules were nullified by a court. And yet still, his medical college is coming after him for $65,000 because he refused to wear a mask. This was not a law. It was a rule. It was ruled null and void by court, and yet they're still trying to hit him with a $65,000 fine. And so the $65,000 question is why? Why? He says he's being targeted because he is, quote, a Christian man of integrity and principle and refuses to abide by these rules. That's why, I think. Because it's only going to be people like him, people of integrity, people who are not living for the moment right here, but are taking the longer view. It's only going to be people like that who are going to lay everything on the line to push back for freedom. He is a Christian man of integrity and principle, attributes that make him a target for government overreach in the era of COVID. That's right. And you're always going to be targeted for that. And it's not going to be limited just to this. But be proud of that fact, right? Because it's only people like that that are going to change this world. We got enough spineless politicians. We don't need any more of them. We got enough virtue signaling. We don't need any more of that. He was a practicing physician in Calgary in 2020, and he went up against Alberta's public health orders, chose not to wear masks during patient visits. Most of his patients also chose not to wear masks during their visits, which quickly drew the ire of the College of Chiropractors of Alberta, which mandated that all chiropractors wear masks. This is not even a governmental organization. This is like a trade guild or whatever. It's like the AMA or something, mandating that everybody's going to wear it and then assessing a fine to him, which I find that to be absolutely amazing. They never alleged, by the way, that he got sick or that anybody got sick or that anybody died, showing that they were wrong about this the entire time. So legally, medically, they don't have a leg to stand on, and yet they persist. And so we have to persist as well. He's going to fight them tooth and nail, and we all need to fight that as well. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some other climate issues. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned, over and over again?
Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. On Rumble, Grant 7777. I have one question for David. How do you do this every day? It does get tiring, I gotta say, and I'm not getting any younger, but I'm able to do it because of your support. So we really do appreciate your support. And, that's what's necessary to keep the program going. Because I gotta have that coffee in the morning to get me going. But it does help to have a routine. And, Karen is a great deal of help in that routine. On Rumble, No Truth in Them writes, any military trainee will tell you without a complete airlock seal around your face, you might as well not wear anything. Oh yeah, I know. I was saying that at the very beginning because, Karen and I had just gone, snorkeling. And for the first time since I was a teenager, I went snorkeling using a mask. And, it didn't work at all with my beard. And so I said that to people. I said, even if you think that this is, you know, typically a mask is going to seal the water out, but not with a beard. So I said, it's absolutely ridiculous to wear one of these things. And of course, we talked about the fact that, airborne virus, from what they say of a virus, it's so small that it's like trying to stop mosquitoes by using one of these chain link fences, right? It's ridiculous. And then we saw, several individuals, one of them a doctor, inhaling or getting a breath of, vape and then blowing it out through the mask. It went out through all the different sides and through the mask as well. We're having quite a thunderstorm here. I don't know if we're going to lose, power or not, but just so you know, we got quite a thunderstorm going on here. The whole thing was a bunch of nonsense. And then finally, you know, after everybody pointed out, well, you know, you don't have any definition of what a mask is. And even an N95 mask is not going to stop airborne viral particles. Oh, but what it's going to do is it's going to stop the viral particles that are going to be on spittle. It's like, no, it isn't. As a matter of fact, they had determined, and there was a study going back to 2002, that, and it was in, it was on in Australia. It was the scientist who said that she had discovered the parvo virus. And, SARS first came out, back in 2002. It was the first time anybody was talking about that much. And there was actually a law, I believe it was in New South Wales. And they said, and it was a pretty stiff fine. It was something like $100,000 Australian or something to anybody who sold these N95 masks and marketed them as something that was going to stop a virus. They said that is patently fraudulent and we're going to hit you with a big fine. And then 20 years later, you got people like Gladys Berejiklian, who is locking people up and fining them if they don't wear this ridiculous mask. And the woman who did that back in 2002, she talked to a lot of medical professionals about whether or not they use masks during operations and things like that. And are we still on? I heard some crackling. She said that what she found with her experiments was that after somebody had worn a mask, for 20 minutes, it was so saturated with spittle that the process of you speaking would push those particles out. They would be smaller, though, so they would travel farther, and they would remain airborne longer, so it actually exacerbated things. She said, if you're going to wear one of these things, you can't wear it for more than 20 minutes. And by the way, we had OSHA saying the same thing about these masks. You're going to create respiratory issues for the people who wear them if they wear them for longer than 20 minutes. We're going to mandate that you wear these in some dusty environments, not for viral particles, but for dust particles that were bigger. We're going to mandate that you wear this, but if we mandate that you wear it, you got to let people out every 20 minutes, give them a break so they can take that mask off because it is unhealthy for them. So, yeah, we saw that in many different ways. Rogue Statesman, thank you very much on Rumble for the tip. I appreciate that. And also on Rumble, Boondock 84 has become a social anxiety kind of comfort blanket or something. Yeah, it has. It is, you know, like wearing a t-shirt that says, the David Knight Show, except just the opposite, right? Just the opposite of that. Let's talk a little bit about climate. We have the Scottish National Party, which has been doing one absurd thing after the other, whether it's censorship or tranny issues that got Nicola Sturgeon kicked off, and then they replaced her with this guy who his parents were immigrants. He absolutely hated white people. He talked about how much he hated the fact that everywhere he goes in Scotland, there's white people. They made him the prime minister of Scotland. So now they've got this precious little thing that they're doing there. And they've got a special kind of fuel that they want to use. They've got some engines for their ferries, and they spell it with the F-E-R-R-I-E-S. But I would imagine it equally applies to the wee folk, the ferries that they imagine all this carbon dioxide and all the rest of the stuff, the unicorns, the ferries, all the rest of the stuff. But for the ferries that they use to transport people and cars from one island to the other, they have them as dual fuel engines, and they want to run them on liquefied natural gas as well as conventional diesel. But it's very important for them to use liquefied natural gas. And so they can virtue signal about the complexity of these things that they can now operate them using LNG instead of diesel. The problem is that this LNG has to be imported 8,000 miles. And to get it there so that they can use it for their virtue signaling, they have to transport it 8,000 miles, this green fuel, from Qatar. They have to transport it the entire way by ships and by trucks that use, guess what? Diesel. This is the absurdity of the eco cult, that they're going to go the expense of having a dual fuel engine, LNG or diesel. And then we want to use the LNG, so we'll use diesel engines to transport this 8,000 miles, put it on our ferry where we're going to go, you know, less than a mile across this thing here. Absolute idiocy. The Scottish government says there's no clear date for when they will have LNG tanks or bunkering facilities. So they have to ship it by diesel-powered ships all the way from Qatar to England, and then drive it an additional 450 miles to Scotland, again, using diesel trucks, so that they don't have to use diesel fuel on the ferries. And this engine is more complicated. It's caused all kinds of delays and expenses. This is how insane this is. And then we look at General Motors. CEO Mary Barra says that they are committed to China, despite $106 million in quarterly losses. I think the stockholders of GM need to get Mary Barra committed and take her off in a straight jacket with the sleeves tied behind there. That's what they needed. She's absolutely lunatic crazy. She's committed to fail. There's absolutely no way that they are going to be able to continue as a company if they have to make this stuff in China. That is not a successful strategy. Trump was right about the fact he said it's going to be a bloodbath with these electric vehicle companies, because China has got the raw materials. They've got the raw materials, and even more importantly, because of the Paris Accord, the Paris Treaty, they have the cheap energy. They can use coal to manufacture. We can't. So every manufacturing concern, whether you're making cars or you're making solar panels or whether you're making steel, nobody in Europe or the United States is going to be able to compete against China because they've been given cheap energy. Same thing with India. They've been given that as well. And GM has already had their head handed to them when they tried to set up car manufacturing ventures in China as well. Before they started all this electric vehicle stuff, they decided they were going to make a car that was tailored to the demands and the what they wanted in the Chinese market, meaning that it was going to be smaller, it's going to be cheaper, that type of thing. They came up with plans. They had a factory that they were tooling up. And then lo and behold, a couple of months before they introduced their product, an exact replica of it had been stolen and manufactured in another Chinese plant. Because that's a big part of the China price, intellectual property theft by these Chinese Communist Party members who have a controlling interest in every country, every company that is allowed to do business there. So what they did was they stole the plans and did their own knockoff version of it and sold it cheaper than GM did. And so they haven't learned anything at all from that experience. GM's market share in China, including its joint ventures, has plummeted from roughly 15% as recently as 2015 to 8.6% last year. The first time it has dropped below 9% since 2003. But they will, they think that they're going to be able to survive in the EV market by moving there. Elsewhere in the UK, the Telegraph has reported that, they want a $30 billion project is being recommended by an organization sending a report to the government. They have recommended Energy Systems Catapult, ESC, has recommended that the British government commit 30 billion pounds to pull CO2 out of the air and to sequester it in underground facilities. And so guess what? They are going to be selling them the machines and the facilities and all the rest of the stuff. But when you talk about $30 billion, the UK, that's a lot of money even for Americans. And that's billion with a B. I'm not getting this mixed up. That's billion with a B. That's a lot of money even in America, but it is a huge amount for the UK. They don't have as large an economy. And so you know, they want to pull CO2 out of the air, pump it in underground facilities. What a ridiculous idea in the first place. There's not that much CO2 in the atmosphere. And all of this stuff about greenhouse gases is absolute total nonsense, but they are needed by plants. So every bit of this is absolutely insane. But they pushed in their report, they pushed the fear factor. Without this, and without doing this at scale, we risk non-compliance with our net zero requirement. So we got to do it because the Paris Treaty requires this. That's what I'm saying. It's very important that we not let them play that same game with us with the pandemic thing. We can't allow them to presume that this is a controlling legal document and then also at the same time presume that it is not a treaty. But they do that kind of stuff all the time with the bureaucracy. Oh, well, you know, this is it's not a law, but it's a rule. And with a rule, you don't get presumption of innocence, protection against excessive fines. You don't get a due process of any way, shape, or form. On Rumble, Freegan says little kids trying to play in the park in Toronto, but their psycho parents had them masked up. Yeah, that's right. And I don't – is that still going on? You mentioned it, have them masked up, so that may still be going on. Georgia Boy, 1142. Ride the lightning, David. Yeah, it is lightning around here a lot. Absolutely. One Sarah B said it's just a money scheme and a power grab. It always is. Every one of these things is. So as they talk about the $30 billion that they do, they say, well, we got to make sure that these plants that are sucking the CO2 out of the air, we got to make sure that they are going to be powered by wind or solar energy, maybe even nuclear, except they're shutting down the nuclear power plants. And that in and of itself should tell you that they're not concerned about greenhouse gases, because that's one thing that isn't an issue with nuclear. It's all a fraud. Yeah, we're going to send the fuel 8,000 miles by diesel so we don't use diesel here. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day.
The David Knight Show. is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. I mean, trust the science. Wear your mask. Take your vaccine. Don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an Elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.